talking to myself. Oh, credit to dementia. Don't think you two will know my pain. And smile, it's black tooth grin. It's the war inside my head. I'll take a day off, I'll be dead. My icy fingers claw your back. Here I come again.
WRAF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everyone. Hi, Jolene.
Hello, Peter.
That was a weird mix. We finished the music portion of WRIF for the next couple of hours with Megadeth.
We did.
And then go into John Lennon and the Beatles.
Megadeth, who has, Dave Mustaine has very different politics from us.
He does.
More along the lines of, say, Ted Nugent.
Huh.
Our buddy.
You just threw politics right into it immediately.
That's what we do.
Yeah. Hey, join us too. 313-298-WRIF. This is WRIF's phone and talk show, and we discuss the issues of the day. And one big issue that is coming up on Tuesday, thankfully.
Finally.
This thing is over!
Because
I am so over it.
I know. I'm completely over it. My mailbox is over it.
Yeah.
Everyone who has landlines, I'm sure you're over it.
Really? You know, we have not been getting any of those calls.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, maybe you're undercover or something.
I don't know. Well, hey, you can reach us at 313-298-WRIF. That gets your voice on the air. The RIF wants to give you an opportunity, like it gives Jolene and I, an opportunity to give your opinions.
Yes.
And we are going to talk about the election one more time.
And you know what? There are some opinions out there. This has been a crazy, couple of years, really, but the last few months have been particularly nasty.
What a nasty campaign. This is the nastiest campaign I remember in my life. It's so filled with lies. And I don't mean that in general. I would say that it's all on what?
The ads.
Yeah. That I would say it's almost exclusively on the Republican side, too.
Yeah,
these
for
people,
sure. And, you know, there's, I think we rarely talk about before the show what we're going to talk about.
Right.
I mean, we are on the same page with what we read and study, but we don't plan. We want it to be fresh and new and not rehearsed. And I think one thing we definitely need to do is go through all of those ballot proposals. So the people here in Michigan, everyone else, it's important stuff. But the ads are so confusing. I mean, I heard even on the radio the ad saying that proposal two, that the Detroit Free Press said it's bad. And in the Detroit Free Press today, they went through everything, all of those proposals, and said, we never said that.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, when I first started seeing the proposal 2 in the Michigan ballot, it's about collective bargaining.
Yeah, it's about unions.
Right. The attack on unions and on the standard of living, the wages, benefits is so furiously under attack that the labor movement decided that it has to protect itself and all workers, including non-union workers, to put in the Constitution that people have the right to do collective bargaining. And you go, well, I don't know. I'm not in a union. What do I care? It doesn't affect me. labor sets the standard. It sets the standard for wages. It sets the standards for benefits. And that's why, like, the Chamber of Commerce has pulled out all these dishonest ads, like saying it's about children's safety.
Yeah.
When I first started saying, I said, is there something on the ballot about,
that I don't know about?
About pedophilia,
right,
and children safety in schools? Yeah, they're really
misleading. They're, I mean, they're just lying through their teeth.
They are. 313-298-WRIF is our number if you'd like to get a hold of us.
313-298-9743.
Okay, and my little mouse is stuck under here. I don't know. I can't.
What?
I don't know. I don't know what's going
on. Your little
on.
Mouse.
My little mouse, yeah. Talk to him.
Well, you know, it's
okay,
funny.
Here we go.
I have similar mouse problems. I have mouse problems at my house as well. My dog tripped over it and pulled the wires right out of it.
Oh, my God.
Crazy dog.
You need a wireless.
Yeah, I do.
Anyway, we're on Facebook big time, and it's facebook.com/nightcall, and there'll be a podcast available at noon on Monday.
You know what? That's probably going to be a little later for the next 5 weeks,
okay,
unless someone else does it, because I'm at school during the noon hour.
Yeah. Oh, you have to post it.
I post it.
Okay.
Yeah, so
well, let's
we'll
see.
Try to work it out.
We have Debbie in Northampton, Massachusetts.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Debbie.
Hey, Deb. Anyway, she didn't post. I wonder, I didn't bring up my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. And she maybe didn't post this one, and you didn't post it because you probably thought I'd lost my mind. I have a big photograph front and center of Mitt Romney.
What's that all about?
And it says underneath it, re-elect George W. Bush.
Oh, yes, I saw that.
So I'm wondering.
They're one and the same.
Yeah. I'm wondering, those of you who plan to vote for Mitt Romney, why you think that the George Bush terribly failed presidency so bad that the Republicans have kept him so far out of sight and off the campaign trail? What will be any different between the policies of George W. Bush, complete with its Reaganomics, mm-hmm, that sunk the American economy, mm-hmm, and Mitt Romney? Now, he has a plan.
I'd like to know if anyone thinks they're any different.
I want to read just something from a newspaper that has endorsed Mitt Romney. This is really incredible. This is in the Wisconsin State Journal, and it's in Madison, Wisconsin.
That's amazing, because that is such a progressive town.
Yeah, well, heavily Democratic.
And it's been the hotbed of activity surrounding collective bargaining.
Sure.
In this country.
Well, here's what the paper's editorial board wrote. This is not an easy endorsement to make. We endorsed Obama for change last time around. Now we're endorsing change again, Mitt Romney, says the Wisconsin State Journal. The paper faults Romney for his views on social issues and unrealistic promises, but praises his reasonableness and smart.
Oh, God.
Well, that's called damned by faint praise. They say they criticize him for his views on social issues, which would be like, woman's right to choose, marriage equality, a hundred other things. And they also says that he's made all these unrealistic promises.
Yeah.
Like he's going to turn the economy around. So why are they backing him? I don't get it.
I don't either.
Get this. Obama gets credit for Iraq, Osama bin Laden, and school reform, but the paper faults him for failing to pass a budget.
Well, maybe there's a little thing called Congress and the Republicans.
The House of Representatives, yeah. Tackle the debt or work with Republicans in Congress. I mean, what planet are these people on?
Yeah, they're not here.
But what I'm curious for any of you to call in is give me the deal with Romney. I mean, what is there that is attractive? I mean, on one hand, some people might say it's like a mechanic. You expect them to fix your car, and he didn't, right?
Yes.
But you know what? The economy is doing good. That's not a problem. The economy is doing excellent. And I'm not talking I'm not talking about the Obama and Democratic Party correct claims that there has been solid job growth for the last 32 months. It's been not enough to overcome the damage that has been done for 30 years of Reaganomics.
Impossible.
Yeah. But rather, the economy itself is doing just fine, and the measure of it is the stock market. Now you're going to say
the crapshoot.
Now you're going to say, now wait a minute. I don't have a job, or I used to have a good job, now I'm working for minimum wage, or I know people whose homes were foreclosed and all that. I understand that, and I think that's much, much more important than these banksters and gamblers on Wall Street, to be sure. But the economy is based around now, increasingly, investment and speculation on the stock market and what have you. So the problem is the creation of jobs. How to get the housing value up and what have you. But what we're looking at here, and here's what Mitt Romney said. This is not a quote, but this is what he wants to – this is a quote. He wants to repeal the regulations that are holding back the economy.
Now, he's talking about some of these environmental regulations.
I don't know.
Probably. He talking about?
Well, that's what I'm wondering for those of you who are saying, well, you know, the Obama didn't work. Now, well, let's try Romney because
he's that desperate.
Yeah, because that he's going to repeal the regulations that are holding back the economy. This is just pure fantasy, folks. There's nothing there. The man, wait a minute. I've got too much
it's
here.
It's just
don't
a
I?
Bunch of words.
Yeah, he does not have a plan.
He is such an empty suit. He defines that phrase.
Yeah. And, to the point where I almost wonder why he wants to be president.
He just wants to be president to be president.
Yeah,
I really believe that.
But he, given his non-plan, nothing will change. In fact, has a good chance to get worse. I don't think that Barack Obama has, unless he's given this full, he didn't take advantage of a Democratic Congress between 2009 and 2011.
Well, he had a tough time.
Well, no, then there was all Democrats, a Democratic House and a Democratic,
but
they did some.
There was still
they
no
did.
Budging.
Yeah, no, there was, to be sure that Barack Obama prevented another great depression. Without a doubt, the economy was on the brink when he took office in January 2009. Things like the almost $1 trillion, the almost $1 trillion stimulus bill, actually wasn't enough. Because ultimately, the contest here, when you're talking about the economy, is between Reaganomics, which means you privilege the rich and think they're going to be the job creators, right?
Yeah. We need them. We need those rich people.
I never saw a rich man that gave a man a job, or a poor man that gave a man a job.
Right, that's right. We hear that one.
Yeah. So it's Reaganomics versus what is Keynesian economics, and that's named after an Englishman. Not a French guy, an Englishman named John Maynard Keynes, who put forth the proposition for modern capitalism to be successful, there had to be this massive, what they called pump priming. In other words, government spending, transfer of wealth, they take money from us in the form of taxes, and then the government spends in order to move the economy forward. And that's in many ways the basis of it. That's the only thing, for instance, that got the United States out of the Depression was government spending on what? World War II. When World War II ended, there was great fear that there was going to be a collapse. All of a sudden you say, well, we're not going to be paying for anything. And then they invented the Soviet Union as this great threat, and we, again, had this huge...
And Romney's trying to do that again.
Yeah, and he's trying to do that again because increasingly... From the right wing with Ron Paul and people like that, understanding that that it doesn't work really. I mean, sure, the $1 trillion that it's spent, besides the tens of billion that goes away in corruption, and they don't even know where it went, and all of that, it provides jobs. I mean, Lockheed Martin provides
the contractors.
Jobs. Yeah, but it doesn't, and towns that are around it and all that, but it just doesn't have much of a bang for your buck. You really need this invested in infrastructure. Because ours is crumbling, right? I mean, Romney, who talks about limited government, like, remember, he was the guy that said we should get rid of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, Bush let go down the drain, and we saw what happened
in New Orleans.
Yeah. And on the other hand, we have, and things sure aren't settled in New Jersey particularly.
And what were they supposed to do?
Yeah. But Romney wanted to take it over, turn it over to the private sector.
Private sector, so all of his buddies can make all the money.
Yeah. You know what was the most, in political terms, one of the more interesting aspects of Hurricane Sandy was the response of Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey. He's got man love for Obama now. Yeah.
It's amazing.
But you know what? You can understand that. I mean, he's a real kind of New Jersey guy, right?
Yeah.
And he saw what had happened to his state. He sees the desperate states of the people, and he sees the president doing what he's supposed to do.
He was there.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was making things happen.
Right. Then, Chris Christie goes on Fox News. And one of the Fox hosts says to him, do you think Governor Romney is going to visit New Jersey? And Christie could have said, we'll welcome anybody. But he said, I don't care whether he comes or not. The only thing I care about is the people of New Jersey and finding them shelter and finding.
Yeah. Yeah.
And right now, by the way, thousands and thousands of people are without homes. There's still people without electricity.
Yeah, well, and how many people died?
Oh, man. Horrible. I mean, that is just what a tragedy. I mean, it was nice that the rockers from that area got together. Bon Jovi, Bruce Springsteen, mm-hmm. Billy Joel, a lot of people.
Was Dylan there?
No. They even did a rendition of Under the Boardwalk, which got kind of washed away, to be sure. Well, the other thing, it isn't clear to me what people expect that Mitt Romney is going to do in a very, very positive way. I mean, somebody that is talking about, for instance, as his vice presidential candidate is Paul Ryan, reducing government and overhauling Medicare. Well, if you're under 55, folks, overhauling Medicare means you're not even going to have your parents or your grandparents have, or something like that. And reduce government how? I mean, I'd be all for taking this $1 trillion that we're mostly wasting on the military. And,
he wants to expand the military.
Yeah, I want to expand the military. The military doesn't want this.
We don't even want it.
Yeah, right. So this is women's rights. How could any woman vote for these guys?
I know. Really? How can anyone in Michigan, when he said, what did he say, let Detroit die?
Yeah, well, let Detroit go bankrupt.
Go bankrupt.
Yeah, right.
Pretty much die.
Yeah. Why, whatever happened to that? And whatever happened to the 47% of Americans that he insulted, that he didn't care about?
Yeah.
You know, all of you, the elderly, the disabled, mm-hmm. poor people, veterans and all that. You know, you're not taking responsibility for your life, he said, because you're getting government money, right? So you can find some models of where government has been severely reduced, and its only function, its only function is to suppress the people. And you go back to the 19th century for that here in the United States. So you had this wealth typified back then by the same type of people that Romney represents now. And when working people got out of hand, they just called out the National Guard or they called out the police. And they just shot everybody down because they wanted to protect what? Wealth and privilege. And this essentially now has its modern reflection. You got to remember, a lot of these people, including Paul Ryan, who admires the idiocy of Ayn Rand,
he really does.
And I don't think he would say it. I'm not even sure they would do it. But there are people on the Republican right that not only want to get rid of trade unions. So anybody that's in a trade union is voting for Romney and Ryan is like cutting your own throat and cutting your family's throat.
Yeah.
And they're not going to reward you. They're just going to take away what people have bled for and died for and fought for.
And you'll regret that vote.
150 years. You think, what was I thinking? Well, what about guns? Well, Romney signed in Massachusetts a bill to abolish assault rifles. Obama has made moves to
nothing.
Nothing. Yeah, so there goes the guns thing. On women's rights, even, like, we know a woman here who said she would never vote for a candidate that was pro-choice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what about all the rest of the stuff? The fact that they've pledged to stop any financing of Planned Parenthood, who provides, you got to remember.
It's actually health care.
Yeah, health care. You know, what is abortions for Planned Parenthood, like 4% or 6% or something like that. But because we have a country that has been engineered by the wealthy to create such levels of poverty that are absolutely unusual in a wealthy country, you have a lot of people that don't have the resources on their own. Other countries, you know, countries like 8 or 9 miles south of here in Canada. Yes, I said south, folks. If you're not from around here, check your maps. or east. You know, poor woman can just walk in and get the care she needs. Here, you got to have the money, honey. Yeah. Or you don't get it. You don't get mammograms. You don't get
preventative health care.
You don't get all the stuff that they do. So it means...
But we're trying as a country to get there.
And what will mean, they will limit more and more a woman's right to choose. And more women, as poverty increases, more and more women will want to abort pregnancies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there's two things that you want that will prevent the need for abortions or women wanting abortions. And first, decrease the level of poverty so that every child can be brought in up in the manner that we know is healthy for a child. And that's a great, you know, great ability or great access to contraception. Because guess what? When there's contraception available, people don't have babies.
Right.
What a concept. Well, all the people.
They need to learn to take responsibility for themselves.
And when you hear, and I say this to the women, maybe I should be letting Jolene say this. When you hear the misogynist, the woman-hating remarks, the disrespect that they have, the all that stuff that these Republicans said about rape, these are not like these people far on the margins. This is the mainstream of the Republican Party. You know, one of the ways, and you say, what century is this? What year is this? One guy, I remember a little, about 6 months ago, he said the best birth control was an aspirin. The women ought to keep an aspirin.
Between their knees.
Between their knees.
Yeah, that was the guy from Wisconsin, wasn't it?
Well, I don't know who it was, but these are attitudes that we thought went out 40, 50 years ago.
Really?
But they live and they're healthy in the Republican Party. You know, I'm not a big fan of the Democratic Party. But what we need is a massive movement of the people. I mean, Romney's talking about a movement. I know what kind of movement.
Yeah, it's a big old bowel movement.
Well, that was not going to be so indelicate. All this stuff.
I can take care of that for you, Peter.
When talk about the environment, Romney talking about repeal regulation. Now, who is putting... up that concept and paying for it. Well, it's the Koch brothers, K-O-C-H, the Koch brothers. They run all these energy companies.
They run the Tea Party.
They finance the Tea Party. It wouldn't be a Tea Party without them.
It would be kind of a flailing movement.
Yeah.
The Tea Party just still exists.
And so it's all about money. But the idea of Reaganomics, that is supply-side economics, that's not it. The problem is, as it was in the 1930s, was there isn't sufficient demand. And the reason that there's not sufficient demand is because people don't have the money to make the purchases that they would like. I'm not calling, for insane consumerism or anything like that. But until that there can be a startup on a mass level of what will create jobs, and it's not the job creators, because when you put more money into the hands of the Koch brothers and Romney's buddies, they're not going to, what are they going to do? There's not the demand there. They're going to say, I got an idea. Let's produce. Anyways, Romney's Bain Capital will probably make sure that it's manufactured in China.
Well, and how much did he make off of the bailouts?
Auto bailout. Yeah, he made $15
million. $15 million. I can't even remember how that happened.
Yeah.
I don't quite understand that, but he did.
People say, well, the debt and the deficit. Well, tax the rich. They got one of the lowest tax rates in the Western.
13%, right?
Yeah, a lot of it for, that was Romney. But the capital gains tax, it can only be on that wealth investment. What you make from investment, make it 50%, something like that. Well, they won't invest. Well, they're not investing on new stuff. It's just riding along on Wall Street. And, I mean, I'm always quoting the New York Times because they have, it's one of the few newspapers that do in-depth reporting. But I was looking at the New York Times today, and I was looking at the jewelry and the watches and the $650 high-heeled shoes and the and then the cheaper ones for men. Men's shoes only cost $275. You know?
What was the pen? Remember one time there was like a $5,000 pen or something?
Oh, that I know. I mean, so this class,
I got this for free right here.
There you do. The upper third is doing just fine, but the real wealth is up in that 1% or even the 1/10 of 1%. Mm-hmm. And what we have now, Robert McChesney and what's the other guy's name from The Nation? Remember, we've had him on a number of times. Anyways, they said
John Nichols,
that democracy is gone. We now live under dollarocracy. I don't mean to say that this has been something unique right now, but when you have like this woman, Linda McMahon or McMahon, sounds like I'm saying the same thing, doesn't it? MC, it's MC capital MAHON. She has spent out of her own money $100 million trying to win the Senate seat in Connecticut, a Democratic state. She's a Republican.
My gosh.
She made her money in the World Wrestling Federation, and she's...
Oh, that McMahon family.
Yeah, and she says that this would be good to put her in, right, because she wouldn't be beholden to anybody.
And there's nothing fake about her history in business, wrestling.
Yeah.
She's a fraud.
Hey, you know, I know a lot of you are listening around the country and around the world, but I want to say a special shout out to Zach, who's listening in Savannah, Georgia.
Hello, Zach.
Hey, Zach. So here's what I'm interested in. Well, anything you want, for one thing. Start with that. But the other thing is, what do you really think that Mitt Romney can do to fix the economy? And how will lessening regulations, remember?
And if you're voting for Mitt Romney, you really need to be able to explain that.
Yeah, because, by the way, I mean, one of the things when, you know, this is a horrible comparison, but Bill Clinton, towards the end of his term, was a lot like Richard Nixon. You know, Nixon was in such trouble that people say, okay, we're going to pass the Environmental Protection Act. And he said, okay, I'll sign it. You know, here's this right-wing republic. You know, what else? All these the Clean Water Act. Okay, I'll sign it.
Well,
you know,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
So, and those were good things. But but Bill signed some really bad things. Like he got rid of something called the Glass-Steagall Act.
Yes.
Which regulated banks and said they couldn't be investment firms as well, which set the stage. And this was a Republican bill. Most Democrats voted against that. We're aghast that Clinton signed it. So that was repealing a regulation. Romney says repeal regulations holding back the economy. It's the relaxation of the regulations that created the mess. Because remember,
these like the FCC too.
Yeah, these guys are what they call the free market. They don't want any fetters on the market. They don't want any constraints on the market. And again, all we got to do is go back to the 19th century. Because if it wasn't for government regulations, the average work day would be 10 and 12 hours. The average work week would be 6 days. There'd be no overtime. You wouldn't have the right to organize if you did.
And if you're a Detroit cop, it is 12 hours.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And on and on and on. You know, there wouldn't be any safety standards. There wouldn't be any benefits. Nothing. And these are the free market guys. Anytime someone says free market, that's a code word for that rich people are going to attempt to rob you. And I don't know why. I mean, I went on to this. You know, it always occurred to me why capitalism has been so awful to so many people for so long. And it's only after these huge struggles to get, you know, decent wages and human rights and respect in the workplace that it even has made work not like it did in the 19th century, just shorten people's lives and make their lives miserable.
Right. The quality of life goes way down.
Being seen by the capitalists, by the owners, as simply an element of production to be purchased.
Yeah. You don't talk so much, you go back to work.
At the lowest price possible. because our labor is a commodity. It's purchased by capital, right? So here, what we have to do, we have to either through organizing at the workplace and by government regulation and law, get a standard of living that's commensurate with what a particular firm or enterprise is making. What I don't understand is why from the beginning of capitalism, wherever you put it, 17th century, 18th century, why these men did not say, listen, these are my fellow townsmen. It was all men, you know, and I'm going to, I want to make a profit because this is capitalism, but I'm going to treat these people nice. You know, I'm going to make the least profit possible, but still rewarding myself, but treating everybody else like a human being.
Yeah. So what a crazy concept.
Yeah. Right. So what do you think? Tell me about, you know what?
I know. And even though my dad's a Republican, I have to say he was a car dealer for 35, 40 years, and he treated his employees like gold. So there was one guy out there.
here's somebody who hasn't been listening. Here's Max in Waterford. Max, thanks for being our first caller. Your 313-298-WRF is the number you called, and there's some open lines. Go ahead. What's up?
First off, I think you guys got Romney all wrong. You've been talking about the capitalist system, all guns even. You didn't say anything bad about Obama with guns. He's done way more measures to eliminate guns, let alone...
Name one.
Oh, yeah. It starts in 1996 here. 1996. Let me give you the exact date.
We're talking as president.
We've said that Romney is. So what?
He did do the Massachusetts thing. He banned the fully automatic weapons. Okay.
Yeah.
1996, he supported the ban on manufacture, sale, and possession of handguns. There is, and December 13th, in 1999, he supports 500% tax increase on guns and ammo.
All right. So what are we talking about, Romney?
No, he's saying Obama. All right. No. I'm not fact checking that at all. I know Romney says he doesn't want to be constrained by fact checkers. But, all right, so it's a wash. So you had both of the candidates that were involved in limiting, possession of weapons, right? So,
Pro-gun groups were stifled at the UN recently.
What?
Pro-gun groups were stifled at the UN recently.
So what?
Stifled? That's the UN. That's their own organization. It has nothing to do with Obama.
Well, tell me some more. So in other words, we have this economy.
God, all these people have it all so twisted, man.
We have all these problems, and you're going to base it all on a vote about guns?
No, that's exactly what I'm saying. I'm starting off with that fact. Right?
Okay, all right.
Obama has probably a lot more... to get rid of the guns in America than Romney will have ever.
Why? What makes you think that?
See it with Romney and Obama is you either are voting for the Constitution or you're voting for unions. If we vote for
Romney,
we buy 4 more years of freedom. You vote for Obama, you're losing your freedoms.
How are you losing your freedom?
What are you talking about?
What freedom are you?
Blanket statements. Are you a member of the Tea Party, perhaps?
No, I'm not. I don't watch CNN for one. I get my sources. I read
Fox News.
No, that's very conservative, and CNN is very liberal.
Well, tell me, Jalene asked you a very important question. What freedoms have we lost, and what freedoms would we lose in the future if Obama, who's probably going to be reelected, by the way?
Yeah.
But
to be honest, I do feel he will be reelected. There's a lot that I don't like about our president that. I don't want to be reelected.
Yeah, but you were going to tell us. I got to go to commercials pretty quickly. But
give us an example.
What freedom have we lost, and what freedom may we lose in the future?
Well, if you see Obama's actions that he has been taking lately, you'll see that we probably will lose a lot of our freedom.
Well, please be specific.
Okay, I will.
Okay, go ahead.
God.
It is not an exact freedom loss, however, if you look at the Obamacare, I mean,
that's losing freedom.
What we have to do.
You know, in other words, people gaining.
Man, I'm going to be able to actually get a mammogram. So maybe if I possibly So help me have cancer?
That right now.
I don't have health insurance.
Yeah, this, you lost the freedom because you now you allow children under 26 to stay on their parents' policies.
Oh.
There's lower drug costs for people on Medicare who are heavy users of prescription drugs.
And free, who have to pay extra.
Free immunizations, mammograms and contraceptives, a ban on lifetime limits on insurance payments.
Oh, that whole little thing about pre-existing conditions?
Yeah, and starting in 2014, insurers must accept all applicants. So it sounds like a lot of people have gained. What's the problem?
Obamacare is a 2,700-page document
that
himself knows about. There's many videos on the Internet of him tripping over it left and right.
Okay. All right.
You're buying into a whole bunch of conspiracy, my friend.
All right, but thank you. We got to go.
Thanks for listening.
You are listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Ever hear somebody say we can do this the easy way or we can do it the hard way? I mean, what kind of a choice is that? At Geico.com, everything's easy. Easy to see how much you can save on car insurance. Easy to go paperless by automatically paying your bill online. Easy, easy, easy. So visit Geico.com today. Of course, if you prefer the hard way, I guess you'll have to go someplace else. Sorry, I just don't get it.
Ernie, I know you're our worst player, but I want you to win this thing.
How, Coach? I've been riding the bench watching Netflix on my tablet all season.
By running the play that would never work if this were a real game.
Sorry, all I know is that Netflix lets me instantly watch as many TV episodes and movies as I want.
Listen, son, when you get the ball, just chuck it. You're going.
Instantly watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on all kinds of devices for only $8 a month with Netflix. Start your free trial today. See terms of use.
Well, ladies, there's a new secret weapon in the fight against cellulite, and it was developed right here by Dr. Michael Gray of the Michigan Cosmetic Surgery Center and Skin Deep Spa. Dr. Gray, what's this new secret weapon?
I call it Cellulize. This procedure breaks up irregular fat that sits just below the skin surface. With it, I can help you more effectively reduce this cellulite, and you can look absolutely amazing.
So how does Cellulize break up the fat?
Using a laser, fat is fine-tuned, smooth, and molded. The heat from the laser also causes tightening of the surrounding skin and tissue. This procedure, together with Dermosonic, refines and shapes the fat, creating fantastic results.
So how does a person get in touch with you to discuss having this new procedure?
You can come in for a complimentary consultation. We'll discuss your situation and review your options. Together, we will begin the transformation to the new, more beautiful you.
For your complimentary consultation with Dr. Gray, call 248-538-3333 or visit anewyou.com.
I'm Dr. Michael Gray. Call me today and I'll see you tomorrow.
No matter how much our kids amaze us, they can't run for Michigan Supreme Court this year. That's why they need judges who stand up for them.
Michigan Supreme Court candidates Judge Connie Kelly, Judge Sheila Johnson, and family advocate Bridget McCormick have spent their careers protecting families and victims of crime.
From getting criminals off our streets to keeping kids out of gangs, Kelly, Johnson, and McCormick are keeping families safer.
As mothers and advocates for children, Connie Kelly, Sheila Johnson, and Bridget McCormick have zero tolerance for violence against women and kids.
Unlike current Michigan Supreme Court justices who suggest sexual harassment is protected as free speech and ruled corporations have no responsibility to prevent workplace assault or even rape, Kelly, Johnson, and McCormick take violence against women seriously.
Supreme Court candidates Judge Connie Kelly, Judge Sheila Johnson, and family advocate Bridget McCormick.
These three protect families.
Paid for by the Michigan Democratic State Central Committee, not authorized by any candidate committee.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. We're asking Romney supporters to give us an idea why they think that Mitt Romney is going to be able to do anything with the economy, given what he is talking about, that he's going to repeal regulations holding back the economy.
Which is a broad statement. And
which
really,
ones?
Examples are always good if you can actually give one.
Yeah. The fact that regulations were loosened is what caused the collapse. I guess it really was the collapse of Reaganomics, of supply-side economics, if that means anything to you. And imagine relinquishing the regulations on the environment. And that's what all these coal ads are about and gas ads are about and all of that.
If you see one of those ads, and I mean, I know I say this all the time, but not everyone listens every week. If you see those ads that they're in a big fresh field of flowers and they're talking about clean coal energy, those words don't go together. There is no such thing.
Yeah.
Coal is poisonous. It's toxic.
Absolutely. And, of course, Republicans very strong against marriage equality, which is soon going to be overturned, I predict, by the Supreme Court of the United States. I mean, the marriage, what is that? The Defense of Marriage Act.
Which is a very evil way of saying gay people shouldn't get married.
Yeah, I mean, whether you think it's good or it's bad, it's unconstitutional on the face of it. It doesn't meet the standard of equal protection under the law.
Right.
If you can't marry and you're coupled with somebody else, for one thing, the law should be blind to that. If churches or synagogues or mosques or something like that don't want to marry same-sex couples, that's up to them. Who cares?
But there are a lot of churches that will.
They will, yeah.
The universal, or universal.
There's of all denominations.
Unitarian churches.
Yeah, there's lots of them.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
There's Catholic churches. There's, a lot of them. You know, they don't, maybe not Catholic churches. But
I was going to say.
In any event, people talk about losing the freedom. Well, these folks have lost their freedom, and they've lost a lot of money, and they've lost a lot of ability to connect with a loved one, for instance, at the end of life and all of that. So even
meaning that, oftentimes if you're a same-sex couple, someone's in the hospital, oftentimes you're not allowed to visit them in the hospital.
Yeah.
And that's been their partner for 35 years. And things about insurance, life insurance, homes, once a partner dies, just not treated as full-on citizens.
Right. You know, by the way, that thing about, I remember quite a few years ago, I was taking care of a very elderly man, and he went into the hospital, and so I went to visit him, and they said, "I'm sorry, you have to have some relation." I said, "I'm his grandson." And they said, "Oh, okay."
They let you in?
Yeah, they never checked.
You kind of need to just say that.
Yeah, I mean, how can you prove that somebody is your grandfather if he has a different name?
Do you need to bring the old genealogy report?
Right. So here's what's going to happen. I mean, unless there's some dramatic change that the economy, which is doing fine right now in terms of the stock market, as I said earlier, it's not doing well in terms of a lot of our cities, our neighborhoods, our families, our friends, our relatives, and people working way below what they used to and all that. And that could continue to limp along. If Romney is elected, it's going to worsen significantly. I mean, the only thing that is going to really make things better is that if we, the people, take things in our hand and create a movement that makes some demands. And other than that,
You feel like a broken record sometimes?
Yeah,
I mean, we just have said this for so many years. Maybe someday it'll really sink in. And I'd hate to say if Mitt Romney wins, that would be maybe people might get more PO'd.
Yeah, well.
I don't want him to win. What if he wins, Peter?
I actually remember before the show I was saying, I almost feel like going on the air and saying, if Romney wins, I'm going to quit.
We're going to quit this show?
Not because, just in 4 years of dealing with, another George Bush.
We did 8 years of Bush and we lived.
Yeah, well, we did, but we spent the entire time talking about the crimes of George Bush,
yes,
the corruption of George Bush, the lies of George Bush.
And I remember just being so angry all the time. You'd have to talk me off the ledge every week.
And most everyone. And then we had the full-time show for almost 3 years.
That's what I'm talking about, during that. I mean, because we were really in it.
And and most people agree now. I mean, the majority of people agree that Obama was left with this terrible situation created by Bush. Remember?
A war economy.
The unfunded wars, wars based on lies, tax cut to the rich.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah.
Remember that? Everybody was buying that crap, Peter.
So if you go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, you'll see a photograph of Mitt Romney, and underneath it, it says, re-elect George W. Bush, because that's who it will be.
There's also a nice picture of us on there.
There is.
And soften the blow.
And also, by the way, on our, Facebook page. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Facebook.com/Nightcall.
Yeah, with lots of pictures on there.
All right. Let's go back to our phone. Yeah, here's Amy. Amy's in Brighton. Hi, Amy. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. How are you?
We're good.
Hi, Amy.
Good. I listen to your show every Sunday night when I'm cleaning a showroom after my other job, and I just really appreciate all your opinions.
Thank you. Great ones.
We're so glad that you listen.
I have debated calling because I'm not a real political person anyway, but this is just a statement that I want other people to think about. Why don't they step out of their box and really think about who they're voting for? If we vote Romney in, we're going to have to pay for him in 4 years on top of Obama and all the security and all the forever they are taking care of. So if we vote a new president in, we're going to have to take care of this other one for another forever. You know, if Obama wins,
yeah,
he's going to actually have a chance. And Congress has been fighting him on this, everything he's tried to accomplish. Let's give him a chance. Let's just give him a little bit of a chance and finish what he started, because now he's kind of got everything kind of under control.
Yeah, it's the festering seems to have gone down a little bit.
Amy, I think some people that aren't just so blinded by ideology, the problem they may have with Obama is that he only kind of has it under control. But Bill Clinton said that, you know, people kind of respect Clinton, and he said, I couldn't fix this in 4 years.
Right.
It could be fixed. It could have been fixed, but it needed extraordinary measures, and it's really not within the American system as it's presently constituted to do extraordinary measures. Like I said, like cut the war budget in half. There you got $500 billion a year.
Just think what we could do with that.
Problem solved. Take all the troops. Why do we have troops in Germany? You know, I mean, what are we still thinking?
Chance. Let's give him a chance.
Okay. All right. Well said.
Yeah. You know,
appreciate it. Thank you, Amy.
You know, during the Bush years, say the last 4 years, the long last 4 years of George W. Bush, we sat here on the air and I said, Peter, this is going to be like, if I had grandchildren, this would be not even fixed by the time they're grown.
No.
That's how long it's going to take for anybody to expect Obama to fix this in 4 years. And I hate to say it, even eight, because it's unfixable, really, completely. They're crazy. And, you know.
Well, this could be, folks, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but whoever gets in, it's not going to be fixed right away.
And,
and in fact, many ways, this could be the new normal. There, right now, the American system is beginning to just take these sacrifice zones, like the city of Detroit, other urban areas, just write them off. You know, they're not even going to be in the game anymore. And it's a matter of, are we going to accept this? Are we going to accept this in a country that has such extraordinary wealth that at the same time we have all this poverty?
Oh, hell no.
Okay. Let's go back to our phones. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Scott. Scott's in Clarkson. Hi, Scott. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. How are you tonight?
We're good.
Hi, Scott.
I wanted to share a quick little story for with you guys that happened to me over the week, over last week. You guys might find some humor in this. My daughter comes home and she goes, you know, Dad, I learned a pretty good lesson at school today. I was like, oh, okay, great. She goes, you know, my friend came in all upset and crying, and, you know, I asked her what was wrong, and I guess she was all upset because her parents had told her that, she better hope that Obama doesn't win, because if Obama wins, they have to take away her iPhone from her.
Wait a minute.
What? And,
yes.
What does that have to do with a 14-year-old having an iPhone?
Because Obama's going to take all of their money.
Oh my God. Yeah. And do we know if these people have money, or, you know, kind of?
They do. I dropped my daughter off over there one time, and it was their collars were pearly white.
And they're going to be just fine. That's the thing.
You know what?
That is awful.
You know, everybody.
Oh my God.
Everybody with money certainly aren't bad folks. I was walking through Pleasant Ridge today, which is a middle class and upper middle class area, and the biggest home and the biggest probably is on three lots in Pleasant Ridge.
Let me guess.
What?
Obama signs. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because a lot of people, I mean, what strikes me is that people with a lot of money that have heart, you know, like all these Hollywood stars, all the rock stars.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. They're not trying to, because
gouge the little people.
I mean, why do all these wealthy people that have so much that they want more and more
yeah,
and more. And
that's how it goes. You make so much, and you got to stay at that standard, and then it's just this desire for.
Well, and I'm not even talking about somebody that's making probably, you know, a lot of people in Pleasant Ridge are probably making $75,000, $80,000 a year, which puts them up probably in the 90th percentile or something like that. And, you know, you could say, well, gee, if I was making $100,000, I could, you know, fill in the gap. But when you start making in the millions, what the hell do you want more? You got everything. You know, you bought your wife the $675 high, you know, 3-inch high heels, and you've bought
you've got your vacations.
You've got your $8,000 Rolex, and yada yada.
Those parents should be absolutely ashamed of themselves. Scott,
thank you.
That's just what a story.
Appreciate it.
God.
Here is Chris in Monroe. Chris, thanks for joining us on 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Hey, not a problem, guys. I was just calling to make 2 points real fast.
Sure.
I remember listening to Romney, and he was spitting out statistics on how Obama has given out more money for, you know, for food stamps and all this, that, and the other.
Right, because people need it, because our country's in the... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I lost my job back in 2010. And before that, the last time I had food stamps was under George Bush. So I'm not quite sure who he was giving it to, because he wasn't giving it to me. But that's neither here nor there. But in 2010, I lost my job. I was able, under the Obamacare, quote-unquote, they want to call it now, I was able to go back on my father's insurance. Mind you, I was married with one child at the time.
Wow.
But I was able to go back on because of the law.
Wow.
I was able to get my shoulder fixed. I'm now able to work a job. But
have you been able to find a job?
Yes, I have a job now.
Oh, good.
But in my opinion, Obama, you know, that seems to be the way to go. I'm not too keen on Romney and his math. I don't know if anybody's intelligent enough to figure out $10 trillion. If he was able to double $10 trillion, it should be 20, not 16. But I
don't even really know what you're talking about.
But it's well,
sounds about so like something he'd say.
You know what, Chris? Go ahead.
I was saying it was when he was talking about the deficit. He said that Obama was able to double the deficit, and he took over. It was $10 trillion. Now it's 16.
Oh, that's not double. Yeah.
So yeah, well, he's always got to juice it up a little, right?
But you know, one of the things that's happened, and in every country in Europe that's been having problems, like particularly the best example is Greece, when the government installs austerity programs, in other words, stops spending money, it gets worse. I mean, so we've seen
Greece,
that it does not work at all. And what's needed is massive. Well, there already is massive government spending. It's mostly in the biggest chunk of it, as I said, was the military budget. And that needs to be redirected. Because what I said was what's called Keynesian economics, where the government spends to prime the economy. Well, you're going to see an incredible example of it, no matter who wins, in New Jersey. Because, and like the construction industries, you know, they don't want to start smiling when people are hurting so badly.
No.
But can you, I mean, what are they talking about? $20-30 billion worth of damage?
Oh, really?
Well, that's all got to be rebuilt. And this is going to, and a lot of it's going to be, you know, some of it was infrastructure, some of it is, you know, going to be private, but whatever, this is going to be what, propels a good sector of that economy for a while. And what we really need, as I said earlier as well, was that we need massive infrastructure spending. We don't need more exotic weapons to fight
God.
Off
bigger, better,
Al-Qaeda.
Faster, more.
Yeah.
Right?
All right, Chris, thank you very much.
You know,
good.
Even
glad
mentioned,
that it happened.
Definitely. Glad you were able to get taken care of. And
the proposals?
Well, the proposals. We have global warming.
Yeah, neither of them are mentioning that.
Yeah, I know.
They don't want to do that.
No.
Right. You
That's
know why?
Too tree-huggerish.
Yeah, because Romney doesn't care because his buddies are the polluters.
Yes.
And Obama is fearful that one of the ways he's being hit in coal states is that you know he wants these, like, green energy guy, and he's going to get rid of all these jobs, you know, that have to do with the fossil fuel industry.
Right.
So he's
been pretty kind to the fossil fuel industry.
Yeah.
Come on.
Way too kind.
Yes.
All right, we're going to have to take a break, but hey, Matt and Jerry, you stay on the line. This is Jamie in Oxford. Jamie, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, It's the Obamacare. Right? I'm appalled by them calling it Obamacare. And really, I mean, the thing about it is, and let me make my point here, and I'm not for Romney. I'm actually for Obama.
Okay.
That Romney ran away from what could be a success. I mean, if you were even, you know, in Romney's camp as a PR guy, he ran away from the very health care plan that him and both Ted Kennedy designed up in Massachusetts.
Sure.
And, I mean, even if he didn't believe in it and, you know, wanted to be the weasel that he is, he should have kind of grasped onto it, and he would have even gotten, like, maybe the conservative Democrats on his side. But instead, he ran away from affordable health care. I get appalled when I hear Obamacare. It's not really Obamacare. It's affordable health care. And as Julian said earlier, it's going to make it available to people that don't have anything right now.
Well,
and that's a whole lot of people.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Jamie. On the other hand, I think a lot of the Democrats have even embraced that phrase. So Obamacare, yeah. But think about this. It's going to help, and it is helping, as our last caller before you said. It's already helping millions and millions of people. And I think where the Republicans, the right wing, thought they were going to really pin this on them, The Affordable Care Act is a good start. It's nothing like what really needs to be. For one thing, it has to get out of the hands of the private insurance companies and be a full-fledged, fully paid government program like they have in every other decent country in the world. So Obamacare, I think, you know, I don't have any problem.
And it has been, that name has been embraced by, Obama has even embraced it. And the analogy I can give to that is that a lot of the gay communities, people in the gay community have taken words that were formerly used as something
pejorative,
like
queer
or dyke even.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know what, we're queer, we're dykes, you know, they take the word back themselves. And I think he's done a good job of that.
But your point is well taken. Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you, Jamie.
All right. Let's see. Actually, we got some open lines now. Matt and Jerry, stay on the line. We'll get to you right after the break.
And
although
if you want to call, do it.
There is a secession movement being proposed, and I'm going to tell you who it is. You might think, well, it's the right wing. If Obama wins, hey, we got to get out of here. Get Idaho and, you know, and all that. But I'm going to tell you about that, then get to the calls. There's some open lines. Again, you know what I think? I think I'm beginning to think, because I know there's some Romney voters out there, that you really are just voting off of pure prejudice, and that on a lot of different levels. And that when I say to you, and Jalene says to you, tell us what Romney's economic plans are and what repealing the regulations holding back the economy, as Romney says, what are they, and when these are repealed, what is going to happen? All right, right back with the secession movement after these.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Listen up, ladies. Breast augmentation is the number one cosmetic surgery among women. And scarless breast augmentation is a better way to go. Dr. Michael Gray of the Michigan Cosmetic Surgery Center and Skin Deep Spa has been the number one cosmetic surgeon for the past 20 years. Dr. Gray, why should a woman choose to have the scarless procedure?
My patients prefer to have scarless breast enlargement because, one, it's scarless, my patients have less downtime, there's less risk of any complications, and they can return to their everyday life much sooner.
So what does that mean?
Many patients are back to work the next day. You can return to your activities sooner, exercise sooner, and do the things you love to do. Your results are beautiful and you're more comfortable while you recover.
Perfect. So how does a woman decide if scarless breast augmentation is right for her?
Come see me for a complimentary consultation. We'll sit down and talk, discuss your situation, and review your options together.
Thanks, Dr. Gray. You can visit anewyou.com to see before and after photos of scarless breast augmentation. For a free consultation with Dr. Gray, call 248-538-3333 or visit anewyou.com.
I'm Dr. Michael Gray. Call me today, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Baa baa black sheep, have you any wool? No, sir, no, sir. Some nincompoop with pantyhose pulled over his face stole all my wool sweaters and gaming system. Luckily, the Geico Insurance Agency recently helped me with renter's insurance. Everything stolen was replaced, and the little boy who lives down the lane was caught trying to sell it online. Call Geico and see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
Mike Rowe here at a Ford dealer with a little Q&A for Fiona. According to the signs, Ford is having some sort of big tire event. How would you describe the event?
It's big.
The savings one might enjoy at the event.
They're big.
What about the selection?
Big.
Get a $60 mail-in rebate on 4 select tires. Use the Ford service credit card for an additional $60. Click on the banner ad.
So I think we can agree then that Ford's tire event is good-sized.
No, Michael. It's big.
Subject to credit approval. Rebate by check. Offer cannot be combined. See participating Ford dealer for rebate details by 11/30/12.
Thanks for rocking with the Riff online. This is WRIF.com. And WRIF HD1 Detroit. Hinder, an intimate acoustic performance this Friday at the Hard Rock. Listen to win tickets exclusively from 101 The Riff. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome to our second hour. We're still looking for Romney supporters who are going to tell us what the plan to put people back to work actually is. Now, Mitt Romney says he's going to repeal the regulations that are holding back the economy. Name them. And tell me about
them. He's not even naming them.
Yeah, well, you're more inventive than him because he's just making it up as he goes along. Hey, I wanted to direct you to my, I forgot all about this, direct you to my website, Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E.com, peterwerby.com, for an incredible article that really sums it all up. It's called This Isn't What Democracy Looks Like by Robert McChesney. He talks about how we've become dollarocracy. But I think it's of extreme importance, and it says on the site, reader caution, socialism is mentioned in the article.
Yeah,
at 1 a.m. Eastern Time, I'm going to be interviewing Bruce Levine, who is a clinical psychologist who he's written Surviving America's Depression Epidemic, How to Find Morale, Energy, and Community in a World Gone Crazy. He says much of the emotional difficulties that people experience are understandable. They're understandable reactions to what confronts them in modern life and not an individual failing. Also, if you care at all, what can I? This is my site, but can I connect you with these recommendations on here?
Absolutely.
All right. Here is Peter's election picks, and you can, if you want.
Yeah, I'm right on, Peter. I'm right there with you.
All right. If you want to call and ask why, for president, any candidate other than Romney.
Yes.
So if you want to vote for
check.
For what?
You know, check.
Oh yeah, yeah. For all Michigan offices, any candidate other than a Republican.
Uh-huh.
Right. Ballot proposal, number one, the emergency manager law, definite no. Proposition two, if you value your standard of living and maybe
union
even
or
what's
not.
Left. Yeah, collective bargaining, yes. Renewable energy, what do they want, 20 or 25% by some distant, by 10 years? Or now, why isn't it like 100%? Anyways, yes on that. Yes to support our home care workers. And then the two Matty Maroon proposals on state taxes, no, and Matty Maroon's bridge. No, if you're out of state, you might not know what that is.
And I just want to send a shout out to my friend Matthew, because I think on that, there was the first Matty Maroon, he was going to say yes, but we say no.
Yeah, we say no. Yeah, there would have to be 2/3 of the legislature vote, to increase taxes. Every, city league and everything is like that. That would really, hamstring, the ability when sometimes, taxes are needed to be raised. I'm all about raising taxes, not on the average person. But for the people that can afford it, like this guy, Matty Maroon, who owns the Ambassador Bridge. This guy's 88 years old.
How long has he owned that? I was talking to him.
Only about 20 years, I think, or something.
Yeah, and I can't even remember. My boyfriend was asking me, like, you know what? I don't know.
Yeah.
Who did he buy
it? I think I can't remember whether it was owned jointly by Michigan.
That's
and Ontario.
What I thought.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, we have a Facebook page as well. Join us there, facebook.com/nightcall. All right. Now, when they're talking about the states are going to go one way or the other, they fortunately have made it this way. They've made the Republicans the red states and the Democrats the blue states. If they would have made it the other way around, the Democrats the reds and the Republicans, they wouldn't have liked that.
That would be the commies.
Yeah. So here is, dear red states, in other words, dear Republican states, we're ticked off at your right-wing attitudes and politics, and we're leaving. We intend to form our own country, and we're taking the other blue states with us. In case you aren't aware, that includes California, Hawaii, Oregon, Washington, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Illinois, and the rest of the Northeast, and, maybe Iowa and what have you. We believe this split will be beneficial to the nation, and especially to the people of the new country of what's going to be called the Enlightened States of America, ESA.
Nice.
To sum up briefly, you get Texas, Oklahoma, and all the slave states.
You can have them.
We get stem cell research in the best beaches. Well, there's some good ones in Florida, but and in Alabama. But even still, we get
there's plenty of other beaches.
They're talking about. I don't agree with all that. We get Andrew Cuomo, who's the governor of New York, and Elizabeth Warren, who will soon be the senator from Massachusetts. You get Bobby Jindal and Todd Akin. Yeah,
Akin's the one who made the statement about rape.
Yeah, yeah, they get him. They get it.
What does he say again?
That the woman's body rejects impregnation if it's violence involved, which meaning that a lot of these women are faking.
That is such a line.
That's typical of Republicans.
Hate.
We get the Statue of Liberty. You get Opryland.
Opryland. Not Oprahland.
Yeah. We get Intel and Microsoft. You get WorldCom. Remember WorldCom? It was one of those phone companies that collapsed.
I do.
We get Harvard. You get Old Miss. We get 85% of America's venture capital and entrepreneurs. You get Alabama. We get 2/3 of the tax revenue. You get to make the red states, the Republican states, pay their fair share. Now, do you get that, folks? That's very, very important because all the states in the Northeast, Michigan and what have you, we send tax dollars to the federal government and we get back less than we pay in. And all those Republican states that hate the government so badly, they get more than they put in. All right. So that means they're going to have to take it. Since our aggregate divorce rate is 22% lower than the Christian coalitions, we get a bunch of happy families. You have to deal with sky high divorce rates. With the blue states, the Democratic states in hand, we have firm control of 80% of the country's fresh water, more than 90% of the pineapple and lettuce, 92% of the nation's fresh fruit, 90% of America's quality wines. In your Republican states, you can serve French wines at your state dinners. 90% of all cheese, 90%.
Nothing wrong with French wine, I gotta say.
90% of the high-tech industries, most of the U.S. low-sulfur coal, all living redwoods, sequoias and condors, all the Ivy League and Seven Sister schools, plus University of Michigan, Harvard, Yale, Stanford, Caltech, and MIT. With the Republican states, you'll have to cope with 88% of all obese Americans and the projected health care costs, 92% of all U.S. mosquitoes, nearly 100% of the tornadoes, 90% of the hurricanes.
Now, the obese thing's a little bit
angry.
I don't like that.
99% of all Southern Baptists, virtually 100% of all televangelists. Rush Limbaugh, Bob Jones University, Clemson, and the University of Georgia. We get Hollywood and Yosemite. Thank you. 38% of those in the red state, the Republican states, believe Jonah was actually swallowed by a whale. 62% believe life is sacred unless we're discussing the death penalty or gun laws. 44% say that evolution is only a theory. 53% that Saddam Hussein was involved in 9/11. And 61% of you crazy bastards believe you are people with higher morals than we lefties.
Oh, man, that's great.
And finally, it says, and we're taking the good weed, too. You can have that crap they grow in Mexico.
That ditch weed.
Sincerely, citizens of the enlightened states of America.
That's fabulous. Yeah. I love that.
All right, let's get back to some of these calls. People have been waiting patiently. Here's Matt in Shelby Township. Matt, thanks for your patience. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. I love your show. You know, I just love tuning into it.
Well, thank you,
Matt.
I just wanted to comment on a couple things. The first thing is the tax bracket, what determines whether or not you are considered wealthy or not.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And as it is right now, I believe, at least it was a couple years ago, if you make $250,000 a year, or the household does, you are considered wealthy. Is that still correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, it depends. I mean, one of the things that that Obama's talked about, I mean, this is up towards, what, 5% of the population makes over $250,000, that's where the increased taxes would be. I think you could put a little higher than that and just put higher taxes on those guys like Timothy Cook, who made like $327 million last year. You know, you let the people with $250,000, be.
Well, you know, the comment I wanted to make on that is my parents, probably 5 years ago, they made, you know, just at that point, $250,000. And, you know, my parents, they live in, a fairly good, suburban home, but they don't live an outlandish life. I mean, they don't have debt. I mean, they save a lot of their money, but, you know, they were still struggling because when they, weren't donating enough money to get under that bracket, all of a sudden they were taxed so heavily that they were actually really hurting when it came to tax time. And it was just, to me, the $250,000 limit saying, oh, you're rich, that's absurd. I can't imagine when that mark was made. You know, was it made in the 80s or something like that?
Well, I got to tell you, Matt, 95% of the people in the country make less than that and have to do. And as you know, now almost 50% of the people in this country are either poor or near poor, struggling all the time. And people can't make it on $250,000. But like I said, all that's kind of arbitrary. The whole tax code sucks real badly. It ought to be really redone and, get rid of this capital gains tax, which means that if you're getting money back from investments, it's taxed at regular income. You know, I work and they tax it at what, 25 or 30 percent. If somebody's getting income from just sitting and doing absolutely nothing, they get only taxed at 15%. So there's a lot of a tax code could be constructed and should be constructed that's a lot simpler than this one. And I mean, whenever you have bureaucracy, Whether it's in private bureaucracy or government bureaucracy, there's going to be a degree of arbitrariness. And I mean, what happens when somebody makes maybe that's what you're saying, you know, $249,999.99 You know, they're okay. They make another 2 cents, and suddenly they're having to pay $5,000 more taxes. Obviously, that doesn't make sense, but. The real money isn't in people. The real impacted wealth that's hurting this country isn't in the people making $250,000 a year, even though that's more than 95% of the people make. It's in the people that have this extraordinary wealth, these billions and billions and billions of dollars. So you have like the Walton family who never, you know, never did a damn thing except get born into their daddy's house. And, you know, the five of them are, you know, the heirs are worth like $100 billion. I mean, you could take $99 billion in that family, split up a billion, so they're left with $200 million apiece in wealth, which means they can buy everything they want, do anything they want.
No problem.
Why should we even have a system that allows that kind of wealth? So we need a confiscation of major impacted wealth to begin with. And start using it for people that are hurting and, you know, folks that need their kids' teeth fixed or can't afford college. I mean, let's use that money and make all the colleges free. Why should our students have to come out of college with these huge debts and they can't even find jobs? All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Some open line, 313-298-WRIF.
Yeah,
here is Jerry.
They can't even begin to pay those loans back.
No. Jerry in St. Clair Shores. Hi, Jerry. You're on the air.
Oh, hey, Peter. Hey, Jilling.
Hi.
I just wanted to comment about the deregulation and the free markets things. And I think people should look at the markets and capitalism itself much in the way we look at fire. Everyone understands we need fire to heat our homes, to cook our food, to provide energy. But we also understand the consequence when fire gets out of control because
sure.
It is such a dense, concentrated form of energy. It has a disproportionate impact on the environment around them. When you see the markets that deregulate themselves and you see this concentration of wealth, you see that this concentration of wealth is having a disproportionate impact on our electoral process and our whole principles of democracy.
Sure.
When you have a group of rich investors who pool their resources, which is their capital, and then give this pool of resources a legal charter called a corporation, and then claim that this corporation, this huge entity, only has limited liability under the law, yet the same rights as individuals, and say that this is the way to go, yet when the poor people or the working people pool their resource in the form of a union and say that that's somehow a threat, I don't think you understand the direction in which this country is going.
Well, one of the things when we talk about the election of Mitt Romney, people say, well, maybe he can fix the economy. Again, no one has been able to call up 313-298-WRIF and tell us what the plan is.
We keep trying to get
We keep trying. I mean, come on. He wants to repeal the regulations that are holding back the economy. And we're saying, what regulations are those? And tell us the process. This is more supply-side economics. You give the wealthy, money, they'll create jobs. They're the job creators. Well, they ain't producing squat, you know? But
just for themselves.
Yeah, right. All right. Thank you very much, Jerry. Appreciate your call. And let's see. Here is Rob. Maybe he's going to let us in on Romney's secret plans. Go ahead. You're on the air. Hey, Rob, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah. I'm reminded by Mr. Romney's plans he won't let us in on of a plan that Richard Nixon had to end the war in Vietnam.
You know, it's interesting. I was thinking that same thing. And they never had any, really, did they? But
Nixon's idea to end the war was just keep on going with what was going before.
Well, here, let me ask you a question that I couldn't ask if you asked me, but you could say, I don't know as well. Why in the world, Jolene, kind of answer, would Mitt Romney want to be, the president when unless he is completely stupid, which he doesn't seem to, I mean, he's craven, he's crass, he's, you know, Etch-a-Sketch, Mr. Etch-a-Sketch and all that, but if he's going to go in there, and things aren't going to get better. They're going to get worse. Why? I'll tell you what. Here's my prediction. If Obama is a one-term president, Romney will be a one-term president for sure. So I don't get it.
Well, you know, I think he just wants power. His daddy wanted to be president and never got to be president. It's the same thing as, you know, George W. Bush. He wanted to be president because his dad was denied a second term. I think Mitt wants to be president because his dad never got his first term.
He could be. You know, I think to ordinary people, of which, you know, people, I don't, oftentimes don't think people on the radio are ordinary people, but at least people like Jalene and I are, we don't have those kind of ambitions. And, you know, I mean, we have ambitions. I don't have much ambition.
I have a lot of ambition.
I don't have much ambition. I mean, every time I work full time in this industry, you know, doing full time talk shows, I'm miserable, you know.
I can attest to that. Although, you know, it's important.
Yeah. But where was I? I don't know. I was somewhere or other. Oh, yeah, yeah. So the idea of somebody like George Bush, I mean, didn't he have any kind of self-reflective ability to know that he was such a lightweight that he had no capacity to fill the job? And every time he opened up his mouth, he sounded like a moron. Hey, you know where George W. Bush is going to be, Rob, tomorrow? He's going to be in the Cayman Islands. Really?
I did hear this. Giving a
talk on investments.
Oh, my God.
Will he check on some of Mr. Romney's money for
him? Exactly.
And some of his, I'm sure.
Yeah. All right, Rob, thank you very much.
Sure enough.
Appreciate it. 313-298-WRI.
And, you know, we haven't really said anything. Make sure you get out and vote on Tuesday. We haven't been doing the big push. I mean, why haven't we said that once?
Well, I just got a release from Republicans that say that now Mitt Romney is leading in Michigan. No, just because they say it.
Well, it's the Republicans saying it.
Here's two indicators. Although Nate Silver, who is the guy that writes, what is it, the 538 blog? What does that even mean, 538?
535, wasn't it?
530. Oh, that's the, no, wait a minute. That's how many, I was just doing the math. 400, must be 535.
At least it's not dead air when you do the math.
Yeah, 535 would be how many senators and, but I don't even know if that's it. Anyway, let's stay away from that. But Nate Silver, who's the statistician, he says that there is a 75% chance
that Obama's going to win.
And
and he's holding by that.
And he's holding by it. But the right wing says they don't listen to anything he says because he's gay.
Are you kidding me?
Really? I mean, they're
these people are so full of hate.
They're twistoids.
They are.
They're twistoids.
Yeah. Well, they're probably a little closeted.
Yeah, probably. And but maybe okay. Let's talk about something real. What do you call those people in London that make these bets? Anyways, if you bet a dollar on Romney is going to be president and he wins, you get $13 back. If you bet a dollar on Obama, you only get $3 back. So, in other words, that Romney's a 13-1 shot to win, and Obama's a 3-1. I hope so.
We'll be talking about it next week, regardless.
Yeah.
What are you laughing about? What are you reading?
Just one of our callers and what he's going to say.
No inside jokes.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to get him on the air.
Okay, good. And the phone lines are heating up.
Here's Fred in Detroit. Fred, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Peter Jalene.
Hi.
Hello, Fred.
Yeah, after listening to your very first caller, my question always comes back to, what is there to vote for when you vote for conservatives?
Well, yeah.
Because their own interests, their pocketbooks, I would say, for Republicans.
Right. Now, the military-industrial complex has been a form of welfare for a lot of people.
Sure.
The prison industrial complex has been a source of subjugation for a lot of others.
Yeah.
You got sold down the river with Reaganomics. Even before that, one of the first scams perpetrated was this going away of pensions in favor of 401k plans that the average person can't monitor.
Right. So what you need,
that's right.
We got to bring back the fixed benefits for retirement, for sure. I mean, that could be done by law.
And, you know, and then you get the whole prescription drug plan a couple of decades later, a huge giveaway to the prescription drug companies.
That was under Bush. Yeah, that it was unfunded, which made the deficit and the deficit even greater. Hey, you know, though, here's, though, Fred, the way things look. You know, that what we're going for, and I've said this a lot, we're going towards the model of, like, Guatemala and Mexico, which means there'll be this privileged upper layer, maybe in this country even as much as a third of the population. And then as you get below one-third, it'll get meaner and meaner and meaner down to the bottom, where people are, like, living post-capitalist. They're not even involved in any wage work or consumption at all. And we know the kind of social strife and misery and disease and poverty that occurs in those countries. Mm. Like, the richest man in the world is not Bill Gates, guy that lives in Mexico. I mean, he could almost single-handed.
Mr. Slim.
Yeah. Where right. The other model are the social democratic countries of Europe, particularly the northern tier, many of them, like Norway, that I believe it is, that hasn't even had any economic problems, where the wealth is really shared greatly. You still have rich people. They still have, you know, they still drive fancy cars and they got big houses and what have you, except their income is in the upper hundreds of thousands rather than, I keep coming back to Timothy Cook and Microsoft, making $327 million a year, of which he could, how much could he consume? Why does he want that? What does he do when he gets up to having, or, you know, like, billions.
I mean,
Bill Gates can't even give his money away. He's got so much.
Yeah.
You know?
He just picks.
Yeah, we ought to relieve him of it, put it back into the general fund, and leave him enough to still do charities and what have you. So, you know, we're not talking any commie thing. We're, you know, leave. You can say, once you get over a billion, poof, just disappears back into the treasury. All right, Fred. Thank you very much for our call.
So radical.
All right. Now, here, where I wanted to see this. All right, here somebody wants to talk on the economy, and John, our phone screener, says he's very vague, and he says it's a surprise. It is Maurice from Detroit. Maurice, you're on the air.
Maurice.
Hello, Peter and Julie. How you doing?
We're good.
Good. Good to hear from you.
What's up?
I've got two points I'd like to make. I've been telling people all year the Tigers wouldn't win the World Series because they couldn't hit left-handed pitching. Okay,
his
the way you can stimulate the economy is do a bailout on other people. Give the people their money.
There you go.
Yeah.
And we'll stimulate the economy.
You know, you're absolutely right. And here's the way you could do it, for starters, is have a $50,000, been saying this for all my radio
yes,
life.
Yes, you have.
A $50,000 tax deduction. That means
you make 50 grand, you pay nothing.
You pay nothing, right. If you make, you know, $55,000, you pay tax on $5,000. You say, well, wait a minute, where are we going to get all this money? From the rich man.
I've really grown to love this concept, I have to tell you.
From the rich man, so we agree. Maurice, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Maurice, your phone's better.
Yeah.
I can actually understand you.
Okay, so.
A little better.
Wait a minute, someone's got to correct me. So it's not 535, it's Tim from Belleville. I was talking about Nate Silver's. It's 538, right? You're on the air. What's it mean? What's 538 mean?
538 is the count of electoral votes there are.
Oh, that's right. And
that's the total electoral vote.
Yeah, you need 270 to win, right?
And right, 270 to win. And as of 7 p.m. tonight, I think it said it was updated last, and it was about 85%, to Romney's almost 16%.
What?
Chance of winning.
Yeah.
Chance of winning.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? There is so much Republican electoral chicanery going on. For one thing, we need to find out. Yeah, go ahead.
I would remedy that, too. I would say that's based on polling. This guy is dead on accurate. You know, he started out doing baseball stats, and then he made a living playing poker. He just knows these numbers. He watches the polls. In the last election, he picked all but one state and every senatorial race.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I'm going with this guy.
Look up 538 blog. It's really interesting to read because he talks about, Obama is building a firewall between Wisconsin Iowa, Nevada.
We have that right here, isn't it?
Yeah, we do have it. Obama's Electoral College firewall holding in polls. Yeah.
Right, right. And, you know, it's like you could know, except for like you talked about, the chicanery. That's based on polls. That's what the people want. Now, it's going to depend on how many of them actually get to vote. How many of them, how many people's registrations were thrown in the dumpster? And so they're going to show up at the polls and they'll say, well, you're not even registered.
Right.
You can't vote.
Sure.
Yep.
That's what it's going to come down to.
And also, you know, this is amazing that the Romney family has investment ties to the voting.
Oh, yes.
Voting
machines. Peg Romney is in with the company who owns some of the voting machines in some of the counties.
Well, he could lose because of things like that. Obama could lose the popular vote, but the electoral votes.
Well, we got somebody who wants to talk about that in a second, a caller on hold. So,
okay.
So that's why always, and this is what scares me when even some of these polls show that it's even with 2-4%, because usually the Democrats have to win real big to get around the voter suppression and what have you.
Yeah,
right.
So you've got to get out and vote, everybody.
It's going to come down to Ohio. If Romney can't win Ohio, then he probably will not win.
That's right. So
straight up,
we will see. So actually,
maybe that's why Tags bought machines in Ohio.
God, it's such a racket.
Well, we have
scary.
Entered Monday, so the election is tomorrow.
Oh.
All right, thank you very much.
I'm
appreciate
not
it.
Sleep tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, you know, it could be one of these things that it could go on into the wee hours of the night.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, here is somebody, here's Craig in Warren that wants to talk about what you started to talk about. Jalene, Craig, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
We're good.
Good, hi, Craig.
I just want to make a comment and then I'll hang up. I think it would be hilarious if Romney won the popular vote and Obama won the electoral vote.
I know.
I just
give it back to them.
You know,
and their crooked machines.
The right wing will go absolutely bonkers if Obama wins, period. You know, say wins I think he'll probably win the popular vote and the electoral college. But it would be great paybacks given that happened to the Democrats in 2000 where
with Bush.
Yeah, where Gore won the popular vote. So Jalene and I were just coming on with this daily nationally syndicated talk show, and we always referred to Bush as the loser.
Because he was.
Instead of we're calling him the president, we called him the resident.
Yeah, because he was just taking up residency.
So this is, I'm putting this out there. So, I mean, I don't know. What are we going to say, Jalene, if that happens?
Well, but
they say TS. I'm going to do a lot of initials. TS, paybacks or MFs.
So that's right. But those were different circumstances.
Yeah, they were. But the Democrats absolutely got cheated out of the election in 2000.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, Craig. We shall see, as Mom used to say, we shall see what we shall see.
Right.
What the hell does that mean?
Such sage, deep advice.
Yeah.
It's just trying to tell us, get over it.
Yeah,
tomorrow's another day.
John's only kidding. It sounds like you guys want people to vote for revenge and not love of country. You know what I was thinking, John and Jalene?
A little bit of both.
Yeah. I wonder what would have happened if what was John McCain? I love him. I can't think of the name.
I know.
John
I love
McCain.
When I forget his name.
And remember that woman that everybody on the left was so afraid of, Sarah Palin.
Oh yeah,
how goofy she looks.
Oh god.
She shows up rooting on her daughter on Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, I know.
My wife says, "Come on in." You know, Brit. What's her name? Something.
Brittany. I love when I forget her name too.
Brittany?
Bristol
doing the Bristol
stuff. I don't watch that show. I don't watch a lot of television.
Yeah,
but.
And the last time when she was on, the righties kept voting for her. This time she got blown off real early.
Oh, she's done.
But she's had, how old is she? Isn't she like 23 or something?
I don't even know if she's that old yet. Right?
Well, she's had all this work done on her face and all this.
She got the nose job.
And it was scary. It's like they're showing like things from the past. I'm going, is this the same person?
Yeah, she went all Hollywood.
We got to take a break, but we got lots of open lines and people waiting. And I guess what we're going to have to conclude that none of you, or maybe there's nobody listening that plans to vote for Romney except for that one guy who was just talking about guns at the beginning of the show, that Romney has a plan for putting America back to work, and we're very interested to know what that is.
Yeah.
He says we're going to repeal the regulations that are holding back the economy. And I wonder what those are. Maybe they will unleash the investments. Oh, that didn't work, did it? All right, right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Everything that rocks worldwide. You're listening to WRIF.com.
No matter how much our kids amaze us, they can't run for Michigan Supreme Court this year. That's why they need judges who stand up for them.
Michigan Supreme Court candidates Judge Connie Kelly, Judge Sheila Johnson, and family advocate Bridget McCormick have spent their careers protecting families and victims of crime.
From getting criminals off our streets to keeping kids out of gangs, Kelly, Johnson, and McCormick are keeping families safer.
As mothers and advocates for children, Connie Kelly, Sheila Johnson, and Bridget McCormick have zero tolerance for violence against women and kids.
Unlike current Michigan Supreme Court justices who suggest sexual harassment is protected as free speech and ruled corporations have no responsibility to prevent workplace assault or even rape, Kelly, Johnson, and McCormick take violence against women seriously.
Supreme Court candidates Judge Connie Kelly, Judge Sheila Johnson, and family advocate Bridget McCormick.
These three protect families.
Paid for by the Michigan Democratic State Central Committee, not authorized by any candidate committee.
Yes. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much. This is our last segment. Before the election, your last chance to get on the air and tell us what plan Mitt Romney has to get people back to work.
Please, please.
There isn't one. There isn't one. I mean, yeah, come on.
I know. It's just a bunch of empty words.
Yeah. By the way, where did it go? Yep. One of the reasons that the Wisconsin State Journal is backing Mitt Romney after supporting in this very, very liberal city of Madison. They endorsed Barack Obama in 2008, and now they're backing Mitt Romney, and he says that he was unable to work with Republicans in Congress. And Romney has been holding that out as saying that if he's the president, he'll be able to work with the Congress, or with, at least with the House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm.
That's where a lot of the bills begin.
Yes.
And that's where, you know, that essentially the recovery was scuttled by the Republicans there because they don't want Obama to succeed. So they essentially held the country hostage. But you may remember that this endorsement, I said, was damned by faint praise. It says the paper faults Romney for his views on social issues, which they don't agree with, and unrealistic promises. Like what? Like getting the economy back?
Why don't you just not endorse anyone?
But they say that his reasonableness and smarts will help him. But then they say Obama gets credit for Iraq, Osama bin Laden, school reform, but the paper faults him for failing to pass a budget. But again, that's because of the Republicans. So here is the, you know, why, for instance, that the Democrats didn't use all these sound bites from the Republican, remember that, the Republican primary debates?
No.
What a hoot, what an incredible comedy show that was.
It sure was. And, it was not real.
Yeah, and all of them were denouncing Romney. Why the Republicans just didn't put together a montage of one-liners from these guys.
Right?
So anyway, one of his closing arguments is that if he's reelected, he'll be able to work with Congress. And he said that on Friday. He warned of a government shutdown, another debt ceiling crisis, two examples of congressional Republicans taking the economy hostage, actually, for partisan gain. But that he said if elected, he promises, quote, not to pass partisan legislation. Well, Alternet says it's a dubious assertion. Romney has made one claim on the campaign trail that is undeniably true. He did bring bipartisanship to Massachusetts. By the time he left the governor's mansion in 2006, many Republicans there, like their Democratic counterparts, couldn't stand him. That's probably not what he meant. In the first debate, he said about his time in Massachusetts, quote, this is Romney, I had the great experience. It didn't seem like it at the time of being elected in a state where my legislature was 87% Democrat. And that meant I figured out from day one I had to get along and I had to work across the aisle to get anything done.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah.
And isn't that great? However, the reality is a little bit different. Romney, Mitt Romney, the governor of Massachusetts, had the dubious distinction of vetoing over 400, that sounds like a lot, right? I misspoke myself. 800.
Yeah.
800 legislative bills passed by the Democratic-controlled legislature.
And he really reached across the aisle.
He said, I know how to veto. I like vetoes. I vetoed hundreds of spending appropriations as governor. But, you know, Romney was overridden 99.6% of the time, 775-3, which included all these Republicans that voted to overrun.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, Daywan wrote in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com, and he said, guys, I know what the plan is. He said, it's more cowbell. Do you know that?
No.
See it from Saturday Night Live? I'll fill you in. I'll send you a video.
Cowbell?
Cowbell, yeah.
Okay, cowbell. No,
Will Ferrell.
Okay.
I know a lot of people out there do get it.
Now, well, wait a minute here. Calvin has just arrived in our phone screening room along with John, and he said that he's voting for us for president.
Oh, Calvin, you're so awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
We have way too many skeletons.
Yeah, right.
We've been saying that for 14 years.
Yeah. They have, wait a minute, where? Oh, I lost it. What did I do with that? Remember, I had up John Lee Hooker for president. That's gone. Yeah. John Lee Hooker, by the way, so I hope everybody knows, is a Detroit blues legend. And Ry Cooter, this guitarist, channels him. I mean, sounds like him,
plays like him.
Yeah. I'll see if I can get up, maybe play it or something like that.
Peter and the caller are both correct. This is from Jerry. The 100 senators and 438 representatives combined are the Electoral College.
There's 438. Maybe they got the non-voting ones from Puerto Rico or from
D.C.
Is it Puerto Rico? I don't know. Why don't we know this?
And
anyway,
real quick, Camelot wrote in, just to clarify, the tax only kicks in on the first dollar after $250,000 of adjusted gross income per individual, $500,000 if filing jointly. Then the tax hike is only 4% more on the money over $250,000 or $500,000. It only impacts about 2% of all Americans.
Yeah. All right, here's Mike in Fenton. He thinks that that Obama is going to lose. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I really do. I don't think he can win because, you know, if you look at a little bit of history, you go back to the Bolsheviks, the bankers, they financed a Russian revolution and they basically had everybody.
We're going back to the Bolsheviks.
Well, other than the fact that that's absolute nonsense, what does that have to do with today? I mean, that confounds history. That's just right-wing crapperoo. But
it's proven history.
No, it's not proven history.
Don't we usually get along with Mike and Fenton?
Yeah.
Isn't he usually with us?
Mike,
that's not my point I wanted to make.
All right, but that's total nonsense. I mean, the
don't spread the nonsense,
yeah,
Mike.
That's far right-wing nonsense. The Bolshevik Revolution in many ways was a counter-revolution to this popular-based revolution made up of workers and peasants, and Lenin and those guys installed this dictatorship. And, you know, I'll tell you, that thing about the bankers and why I'll tell you it's right-wing, and I don't know, maybe I shouldn't even go there with it. When you look real deeply into it, it's heavily anti-Semitic because that's what it is. They claim, you know, it's right along with the stuff about the prodigals of the elders of Zion, and they're both these super capitalists that are exploiting the workers, and then they're also these communists that are, you know. So it's really total crap. But what point did you want? Why is Obama going to lose?
Okay. But that's not what I was talking about, Peter. That's a different angle. The Rockefellers and the some of the other bankers, they were sending money over there for different reasons. But as far as Obama, because we can look out here and we can see that we have a corrupt society and that they can't use Obama for what he's doing, and they have no use for him, and so they have to get rid of him, and they will get rid of him. He will not be president.
Who's they?
The bankers, the bankers have a lot of power, you know.
Somebody bailed them out, right?
Obama makes $400,000 a year. These guys been in business 200-300 years, and they got hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars, and they can buy and sell this presidency now.
But he saved them.
Obama's working against the guys with the money, and they can't use him, and they don't need him. They got to get him out of the way. They need Romney in there. They want him in there.
Well, I mean, Romney's going to work more with the money people, but Obama's done his fair share.
He's got it, yeah. I mean, he's
taking
an American,
care of the corporations.
He's
and
an American president, yeah. And he's going to take care of big business and big
he's
finance.
Kind of a corporate president.
I mean, that's what I'm saying, though. In other countries, the government does the same thing. Takes care of big finance, takes care of big industry, takes care of big business, but they don't allow this enormous amount of money to, you know.
Not at the expense of the people.
And not at the expense of the people. Yeah, they don't have to. Nobody has to have $10 billion where, you know, when you have, you know.
Starving people.
Starving people.
Mm-hmm.
All right. All right. Well, we, you know, we won't have to guess anymore after tomorrow night, which is tomorrow night. Yep. All right, Mike. Thank you very much. Yeah. Although that made me forget something, which did we talk about this, that the Muslim clerics say Sandy is divine punishment.
Oh, that it was divine punishment for that
film,
that video that
for
was,
mocking the prophet.
Yeah, and remember what we're talking about when basically it just blew up.
Yeah, that was all those,
the Middle East.
Yeah, but interestingly, Christian ministers, far right wing Christian ministers, are saying the same thing. Not that it was a punishment for the film. But they said
for
because
people being gay or something.
Yeah, for being you know the
being gay, other crap they come up with.
The same old thing. Yeah, I don't know.
Now what was it? Wasn't it one of Robertson or what was that other freak?
I mean the guy that said that 9/11 was caused by lesbians in the ACLU.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just wants some hot lesbo action. He was just jealous.
Well. I mean, I have no concept of God, but I mean, I always get, I mean, do they really think that he looks down? I mean, for one thing, there is such arrogance.
Lesbians, it's your fault.
But do you imagine, I mean, these guys all really think that they're God's vessel and that
they really do.
He speaks through them.
Prophet?
Yeah. I mean, could they really? I mean, to us, people like us, they just seem like the world's biggest hypocrites.
Yeah.
You know, and they're.
Don't you think they lay in bed at night and like lay there and think, man, how have I really fooled all these people who send me money?
Well, it's hard to know. I mean, the worst people in this country have always tried to invoke the Constitution and Christianity to justify the most horrible things that have, you know, been done. War and slavery and segregation and violence and, you know, repression and
just discrimination in general.
Yeah, the suppression of women and all of that. And I don't know. So, I mean, it's just not... just doesn't make a lot of sense. Well,
so it's the last show before the big election, and there's about 10 minutes left. So if there's any last thing you would like to say, now's the time to call. 313-298-9743.
I'm disappointed about that, but I think it's telling that no one has called and said, here's what Romney can do that Obama didn't do.
Maybe we could just talk about weed.
Weed? I don't want to talk about
it. You sent me a picture or a story about Amsterdam. You know, the government's been trying to close down
those shops,
coffee shops, or make them stop selling pot and hashish, as they call soft drugs in Amsterdam. Yeah. I've been over there. And that's what the signs say in these places. Soft drugs only, blah, 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 blah.
You know,
blah.
I was over there, and I thought, all right. Toke down a little, right?
No, you didn't.
I did.
You did?
I did.
It's bad.
But they put it in with tobacco.
Well, you can get it either way. How did I know that? Though you can get it, but the natives people, that's how they smoke over there.
Yeah, I know.
But the people come from the United States and just say, leave the tobacco out of it. What are you doing? So anyway, I just thought it was kind of a cool story, especially since we have medical marijuana here in this state, that the 220 coffee shops in Amsterdam are going to remain open in spite of a new law that's meant to reduce drug tourism. And the mayor told the Dutch newspaper De Volkskrant that he'd made the decision after considering the consequences, like the black market trade, because there really is a huge black market trade of drugs coming in from Germany in particular. So, I don't know. I thought it was kind of a victory. And our friend John Sinclair lives over there, so he's probably happy about that, too.
Why can't I find on my site the John Lee Hooker for president.
You found it before we started the show,
I know,
Peter.
It seems to have disappeared. Let's see. Here is, Reverend somebody. Reverend, you're on the air. What is Shortcut?
Reverend Shortcut.
All right. What's up?
Hi, Peter. Hi, Miss Jordan.
Hello.
I'd like to talk about the Republicans, how they're always talking about abortion.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're always worried about it.
Aren't they? They're so worried about my crotch. It's amazing.
Right. And I'd like to hook up Peter Werby, Mr. Werby, with a friend of mine. He's a staunch Republican, Rush Limbaugh lover.
Uh-oh.
His name is Vince.
Yeah.
And I wish he was listening, but he hates you.
Oh. Well, that's a pretty strong
word. He hates
word.
You because you're a Democrat.
I'm not a Democrat.
We're not Democrats, though.
Well, he hates Archie Bunker, too.
What?
Okay.
Because they used to make fun of the Republican Party on that show, All in the Family.
They did.
Right. Well, the one thing I'll say real quick that I'll let you talk is that...
You and Archie Bunker in the same breath, Peter.
Yeah.
How many abortions have the Republicans committed in Iraq, when they let George Bush go to war? How many pregnant women did they kill? How many abortions did they commit by bomb and bullet? And have no caring about human life in Iraq, and now they're talking about human life here in America.
You know what? I think that's a great point, because so many women and children murdered!
Outright murdered.
Yeah.
Yep.
I just talked to...
I like you, Reverend.
A young woman who was... a Chaldean, young Chaldean mm-hmm. woman mm-hmm. who, I said, when did you come over here? And she said, 2009. And, I said, you were there for the whole war? And she said, oh yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. Where was she? Like a village outside of Baghdad or?
I didn't get much of a chance, but she said, she would tell us about it. We go to this friends of mine and I, after we play handball on Tuesdays. As we do every election, we're playing handball till about 9:30. Then we go
and
over.
And you better be given Mama, a call here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Here is, thank you, Reverend. Here is Matt in Canton. I think you've got a good question. What's up, Matt?
Hey, I was just wondering, because, the system, has it, people think it's this Republican and Democrat.
Sure.
What I don't understand is, when you have these, politician debates and stuff.
Sure.
Why is it that the only in the Republican or the Democratic primaries they enlighten the other people that are running? There's still other parties that you can vote upon that are not sure. within the system right now.
Like the Green Party.
Yeah, the Green Party, nonpartisan party and stuff like that. Why can't they show up? And why does, the other party shut them out?
Well, why do you think they shut them out? I mean, they're fearful that there's some of these right-wing parties, like the Constitutional Party, and the Republicans are fearful. Well, that's not a party, though. That's not a, they don't have a presidential.
They're trying.
There's about at least five other parties, like the Libertarian, the Constitutional Party, the Constitutionalist Party, I can't remember which it is. I should look that up before, I don't know if I have time, before the end of the show, but, John or Calvin, could you look up and just kind of list all the other parties? So the major parties want to keep it this, their racket. They don't want to put anybody else in it. And I think the Green Party candidate, I think Jill Stein, was arrested trying to say, hey, let me into this debate.
Yeah.
And, but,
she's not afraid.
Yeah. Somewhere or other, there was a debate among all the minority parties. The problem is, Matt, is the money, right? I mean, you have one woman, from the Wrestling Federation, Linda McMahon, that's going to spent $100 million.
There's big money in wrestling.
Trying to get her, trying to get herself elected. I mean, and this has got to be just vanity, right? I mean, does she really think I can save the country? So, I don't know. I think for the time being, we're going to keep being a two-party nation and excluding everybody else.
It's going to be a long time before anything like that.
Yeah.
I that's why I always vote for the Democratic candidate.
Yeah. All right. You have moved in to a noisy spot, so we're going to say thank you. All right. The Green Party, the Libertarians, the Constitution Party, the U.S. taxpayers. So I would say the last three, the Libertarian, Constitution, and U.S. taxpayers, are shut out by the Republicans because they don't want, they don't want votes taken away from them. And let's see, John's right. There's a bunch more, though. And the Green Party, they, you know, they, the Democrats try to keep them away.
Well, why, you know, why, it could be a media thing.
What do you mean?
The media. Oh,
well, they have a commission that sets up the major debates.
Yeah.
And they, I don't know what criteria they have. Didn't in like 20 years ago, didn't they let, what was the guy?
I think they, that Ross Perot.
Ross Perot, yeah. He was in on it because somehow, yeah, that's that big sucking sound.
I'll never forget. This friend of mine, believe it or not, was really into Ross Perot. I mean, and I was a television news reporter at the time, so I was covering all the different races that on election night, and I went to Ross Perot lost. I mean, he was so shocked, you know, and this guy was seriously sobbing. His face was all red. I mean, I'll never forget it. It's like, I wanted to say, dude, did you actually think he even stood a chance?
Wow. That is amazing. The Greens, by the way, here's what's happening. In fact, I don't know, Andy in Cooksville, Tennessee.
Hi, Andy.
Hi, Andy. He said, like, for instance, you know, that's a, it's a given that
they're not going to win.
Yeah, no, that Romney's going to take the state, so he voted for the Greens.
Oh, okay. Yeah, in that case,
yeah.
Didn't you do that one year?
No, I mean, a lot of times people on the left, when it's if they're in Texas or Tennessee or Alabama or something like that,
right. They'll you know, vote damn
for the,
well.
Yeah, they'll vote for the Greens because they know, I mean, they want to support a party. John says I'm with them. What?
I understand that.
Yeah. But like a friend of mine, he voted absentee for the Green Party, and now the Republicans are saying, you know, we're getting close to winning the state. So, man. But it is, you know, it is this monopoly. It is a lock.
Can you vote still before Tuesday?
I don't think, no, Michigan doesn't have early voting.
Done.
You can get, well, you have to, it's too late now. But
yeah,
you,
I was
you,
just wondering.
You can get.
For people's information.
You can get absentee ballots if you're in the states.
Before
if,
a certain
if
date.
You're over 60 maybe, and if you're not going to be, if
in
you're
town.
Not going to be in town.
Otherwise you need to show up.
Yeah.
Show up, people.
So you could, you know, I wouldn't want to counsel to do anything that's inappropriate, but if you thought you weren't, you know, like next election, if you thought you weren't going to be in town, but then turned out you were, but you could still get an absentee ballot simply by saying it.
And you know, just as I plead for people to get out and vote, because it's your right and duty as a U.S. citizen, don't be afraid of these long lines, and don't let that stop you. I'm telling you, Peter, where you and I go to vote, I have never once waited in line. I've walked in every single time and just gotten right in. And even if there's a little line, you know, you've got to make time to do it.
Have you seen what's happening in Florida, though? This is another case. This is like, you know, Republican governor and they're so for early voting, people have been standing in lines for 5 hours.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, maybe they'll get out of the way and they'll clear up the polls. I don't know.
And that's voter suppression.
Yes.
You know.
God.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, I'll tell you what, I'll sit there all damn day if I have to.
Okay? All right, well, I think we're out of time, and a couple of interesting interviews coming up. Bruce Levine, author of Surviving America's Depression Epidemic, How to Find Morale, Energy, and Community in a World Gone Crazy. And there's so many of us with emotional difficulties, and Bruce Levine, a practicing...
What are you saying?
Yeah. A practicing clinical psychologist says that the emotional difficulties that people experience are understandable reactions to what confronts them in modern life and not an individual failing. I mean, he's not about trying to help. He's about trying to help people coping individually because ultimately, but mostly people that have feelings of panic, anxiety, depression, lack of self-worth.
We all have little moments of all of those things.
Yeah. And if you care at all who I think you should vote for, you can go to my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com.
And I'll repost it on our Facebook page.
Yeah. Go to Facebook, too. A lot of likes just popped up. It's facebook.com/nightcall. We'll be back next week to cheer or to cry. 85% chance says that we're going to be cheering. John and Calvin, you guys are great. Thanks for doing all
the
work behind the scenes. And we will, even though you're going to be at school tomorrow, I think we'll still have it up, the podcast up by now.
Cooking up a storm.
All right. Next week, folks.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Detroit's rock station. On the web, thanks for listening to WRIF.com. Thanks for rocking with the riff online. This is WRIF.com.
WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. Whoa, a few more days and there is an election. And everybody is weighing the issues, right, and voting it in terms of the issues that make sense to them, that they're analyzing it economically and ethically and all the other things that give forth to rational decisions about politics, huh? I don't think so. The idea that there's more to politics than just the issues that are on the surface level go back pretty far. There was a book printed in 1930 by a man named Harold Laswell called Psychopathology and Politics, and another book from the 1930s that heavily influenced me by Wilhelm Reich called The Mass Psychology of Fascism. In fact, that book still stays with me. In a lot of ways, I see politics through that lens. So it is a real pleasure to welcome someone who I'll have to let him say whether he thinks he's continuing in that tradition. He's Bruce E. Levine. He's a clinical psychologist practicing in Cincinnati, Ohio, and he's often at odds with his profession, but he's been in practice for nearly three decades and writes and speaks wildly on how society, culture, and politics and psychology intersect. It's a pleasure to welcome Bruce Levine to the Peter Werby Show. Bruce, thanks for joining me.
Great to be with you, Peter.
Do you want to be in that tradition of Harold Laswell and Wilhelm Reich?
Well, I don't know anything about Laswell. I know a lot about Reich, and I know that not in his personal tradition. I think he had hundreds lots of women out there who probably hated him. He was quite a, I guess, a cad would be a mild thing. But politically, he had some very interesting things to talk about, fascism and psychology and politics. And there are definitely a lot of things that, that he talked about in terms of authoritarianism that are real interesting for me as well.
Well, Bruce Levine, you have a new book out, Get Up, Stand Up, Uniting Populist, Energizing the Defeated, and Battling the Corporate Elite, which does not, on the face of it, sound like a book about psychology, but your other two certainly do, Surviving America's Depression Epidemic, and also Common Sense Rebellion, Taking Back Your Life from Drugs, Shrinks, Corporations, and a World Gone Crazy. Well, aren't you a shrink?
I am a clinical psychologist. I should say an embarrassed clinical psychologist, because I view one of, you know, I, and Get Up, Stand Up, I talk a lot about the different spokes in the wheel of why Americans have become so politically passive. Why, if you take a look at the polls, they'll show that, you know, the massive majority of Americans for many, many years have opposed these senseless wars. They don't even know why the heck we're there. Most Americans don't even understand, especially after Bin Laden's been killed. Why are you even there in Afghanistan? So this has been going on for quite some time, that Americans oppose governmental corporate policy on many, many levels, but they just don't do anything about it. And so one of the reasons why I wrote that Get Up, Stand Up was that I had written a couple of articles in 2009 talking with titles like Are Americans a Broken People? And these things kind of went viral on the Internet. And so a lot of people were really interested in this topic. And so a lot of that book is really about how to transform American political passivity, but also, too, for me, in order to kind of get there, is to sort of understand the spokes in the wheel of why we've become so politically passive. And one of the spokes in the wheel is my profession, the mental health profession, of which I am quite embarrassed by.
Now, expand on that. You're embarrassed by your profession. Why? I mean, they try to help people, both some of them just with drugs, others with talking therapy. Your colleagues are out there trying to help folks, aren't they?
Yeah, right, right. Well,
sometimes. Well, I meant that. That was a serious question.
Sometimes. And I think most of them feel they all are. And I think the problem is that increasingly they have just kind of become depoliticized, in the sense of that there's no sense of, like, at what point do you help people adapt and adjust to a situation, to an environment, to a society that has in fact become insane. And so, yeah, that was, that thread among my mental health profession was much more alive when I got into it in the 1970s, 1980s. It was much more alive in the 60s. So you had people like, you mentioned, Reich, who was widely known, but also people like Eric Fromm, who, sure, who talked about the society, in fact, was becoming increasingly insane. And he was scared in the 50s and 60s. He wrote a book called The Sane Society. He was worried about that already psychiatrists, psychoanalysts, psychologists, all of us were kind of just helping people adapt to this kind of dehumanizing, authoritarian, non-democratic society, and that was going to be problematic. And so one of the things, which there are several that I'm embarrassed by my psychology profession, is they're not routinely asking that question, not just in terms of society, but in terms of families and a lot of other places, is like, at what point do you not help people adapt and adjust, and at what point do you validate that people's pain and their anger and their anxiety are very legitimate, and you help them kind of navigate their way out of certain environments. And so the other part that's quite embarrassing for me about my profession is increasingly you have these uses of these diagnoses called oppositional defiant disorder. So I work with a lot of young people. I've been doing that for many years. And so this, for those of you who don't know anything about these diagnoses, this oppositional defiant disorder,
ODD,
it sort of came in, a lot of these diagnoses come in 1980, the same year sort of Reagan becomes president, as his DSM-3 gets published, and all of America sort of seems to become more authoritarian, including the mental health profession and their diagnoses. And this diagnosis is not like what we used to call juvenile delinquents, or these kids are doing nothing illegal, these ODD kids. They are really, their symptoms are often arguing with adults, often refusing to comply with adults. results rules. I mean, these are the official symptoms. And increasingly, these kids, at first they just were sort of behavior modified, and now increasingly they're being psychiatrically drugged. And this actually happens a lot more with kids who are more impoverished. Kids will more likely get antipsychotic drugs, which are heavily tranquilizing drugs for no psychotic conditions, including these things called ODD. So there are a lot of things about my profession. We can do a whole show about what I'm embarrassed by my psychology profession. But a lot of it has to do with kind of taking the spirit out of those potentially anti-authoritarian kids out there who represent this kind of spirit of resistance against illegitimate authorities, which we so desperately need, I believe.
I was so major ODD and ADD when I was in school. I was just lucky they didn't have those drugs around. I just got sent to the boys' counselor's office and had to write by hand. The punishment was you'd write by hand from King Arthur. You had to, depending on how bad you were, you had to write for an hour, you had to write for 2 hours or something like that. My guest is Bruce E. Levine. He's a practicing clinical psychologist in Cincinnati. And his book, his latest book is Get Up, Stand Up, Uniting Populists, Energizing the Defeated, and Battling the Corporate Elite. It is available from Chelsea Green Publishing. You can go to brucelevine.net. There'll also be a link on my website, peterwerby.com. Now, if you just go through the titles of your book about Get Up, Stand Up, Surviving America's Depression Epidemic, and Common Sense Rebellion, well, you need a little bit of, well, maybe not. Let's just stay right there. There's a thread through there, isn't there?
I guess. What do you think? What thread do you see there?
the reason that Bruce Levine is laughing at this is what people do in therapy. They turn it back on you. What thread do you see there, Peter? Well, Bruce, what thread do you see there?
Well, clearly a lot of what I'm writing about, and I didn't really sort of realize it in the beginning of my writing, that a lot of it would tie together just about a kind of increasingly authoritarian society and the need to sort of challenge it. And that, I guess I should define some things. Authoritarian really just simply means somebody who gives unquestioning obedience to authority regardless, who that authority is. And it's an anti-authoritarian is somebody who assesses whether an authority knows what the heck they're talking about, or they're lying, or they care about you or not. And if they're not a legitimate authority, you don't take it seriously. That's an anti-authoritarian. And so a lot of what I care about is how America has become sort of increasingly authoritarian, and a lot of our kind of institutions have created that, including my own mental health profession. And one of the interesting things that I saw just in my practice is this idea that a lot of people out there who are diagnosed as mentally ill, not just these oppositionally defiant disorder kids, but also people who are depressed, people who are diagnosed with depression disorder, anxiety disorder, even a lot of folks with substance abuse and psychoses, that are a lot of the reason why I really like doing what I do is that a lot of these people are not essentially mentally ill. They're really more anti-authoritarian. And the problem a lot is that a lot of my colleagues, not all of them, there are some rebellious colleagues, but the vast majority are very much more compliant, conformist, authoritarian type people. And so when they are around a more rebellious, anti-authoritarian people, it creates a lot of tension for them. And so they will more likely try to reduce their tension by diagnosing them, drugging them, that kind of thing. And that's created a lot of problems. And as I've gotten out there, and not just through my clientele, but a lot of public speaking and writing, I get lots and lots of responses from people who say that just totally resonates with them. People who had been diagnosed, again, not just with oppositional defiant disorder, but with depression and almost all of these kind of diagnoses, mental illness diagnoses. So the hopeful thing about that, I mean, it's sort of depressing in one sense that this huge potential army of anti-authoritarians who maybe, once they achieve some political consciousness could actually be transforming American society, that the hopeful thing is that they are actually out there, that this whole country, this whole society isn't as authoritarian as it appears, the depressing thing is that a lot of these folks are being kind of diagnosed, medicated before they even achieve any kind of sense of political awareness, and that's one of the things I wanted to do something about.
And they take it on themselves as an individual failing or a problem. I mean, usually, people that are depressed, that are anxious, that are diagnosed as ADD, it's an individual problem. Right.
And that's one of the other list of things why I'm embarrassed by my mental health profession is that they propound these kind of mumbo jumbo theories. And, you know, people have to understand that psychiatry, starting in the 1980s, just really pretty much got annexed, taken over by drug companies. So we have, just like there's a military industrial complex, there's a psychiatric pharmaceutical industrial complex of which, so almost everything people hear out there, almost everything, every institution, pharmaceutical companies have control through lots of money. Almost everywhere psychiatrists get their education has received big money. Their continuing medical education credits, the psychiatry departments, the American Psychiatric Association, all these folks take drug company money. And so there is this one thing that they're hearing over and over again. And what has that done? Well, for years, of course, pharmaceutical companies, it's in their interest to have everybody believe that, for example, depression is this biochemical brain imbalance caused by, most recently, their theory that they perpetuated 25 years was that it was caused by low levels of serotonin. Therefore, you take their drugs that jack up serotonin within a neurosynapse, stuff like Prozac and Paxil. Well, that's going to cure it. It's a great theory to sell drugs, just like, you know, that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq was a great theory to sell a war. The problem was both aren't true. And actually, even the higher-ups of the American Psychiatric Association and the highest levels of psychiatry have now finally retreated from that whole theory of, serotonin being the low levels of serotonin being the cause of depression. But the damage has already been done. Most people still believe it. And in general, people have totally bought into the idea that if they are severely depressed, they've got this kind of individual problem, as you say, this biochemical brain imbalance. And what that does is really tragic because it gets you away from the obvious of, like, what really causes depression. And I can tell you what we know is associated with depression, and this is going to be common sense for everybody in your audience who still is, you know, lucky enough to have their common sense, is that it's associated with overwhelming pain. So depression is associated, for example, and folks in Detroit, I'm sure, can really resonate with this, the more you're unemployed. I mean, the higher the likelihood of you being depressed increases threefold if you've been unemployed for a period of time, if you're on public assistance, if also other kind of pains, if you're completely isolated, you have no confidants in your life, and that's another scary thing of America. There's increasing number of people who don't have a friend, you know, any kind of a friend, and this, we've got lots of statistics to show how isolated people have become. If you're in a horrible marriage where, you know, people hate each other, that's going to be creating overwhelming pain, and you're more likely to be depressed. If you have a physical illness, so there's a long list of things that we know create overwhelming emotional, physical pain, and those are the people who are much more likely to be depressed. And once you understand that, you start thinking a little bit more politically. You start thinking, well, what are the aspects in our society and our culture that are creating unnecessary overwhelming pain, and maybe we should be doing something about those to kind of help people's mental well-being.
The book is Get Up, Stand Up, Uniting Populace, Energizing the Defeated and Battling the Corporate Elite. My guest is Bruce E. Levine. He's a practicing psychologist, a clinical psychologist. And you know, I'm taking our dog, my wife and I are taking our dog to obedience school. And one of the things they talk about is impulse control. So the little doggy's got to stay there and not bolt when she sees a squirrel or, you know, some distraction. And it occurred to me, given our conversation, that's exactly what they were trying to teach me in school. And we didn't have A, B, C, D, E, F. We had honors, satisfactory, and unsatisfactory. So it was H, E, S, and U. And always I would bring home a report card that said self-control, and there'd be a big U for unsatisfactory, right? So but on the other hand, a society demands conformity. Every society, even ones that work well, demand conformity to its fundamental rules. And so you have kids, for instance, or families that report, yeah, my kids were terrible, but then I put them on this or that medicine, and now they study, and they don't have oppositional defiant disorder anymore. So that, you know, they're reporting these successes.
Well, it depends what you mean by success. And, of course, a fundamental political problem, fundamental family problem, fundamental relationship problem is what do you do with conflict? What do you do with the tension of disagreement? Okay, this is the essential part of what the quality of difference in terms of societies and families. So, for example, if you have one thing when you have a kind of authoritarian society, a fascist society, one example being Nazi Germany, but any kind of fascist authoritarian societies, what do you do with disagreement? You have people who disagree, you kill them. I mean, any kind of individual differences, you just get rid of. That's one way to kind of get rid of tension. It's very effective. I mean, another way to deal with tension is something called democracy, real genuine democracy, whereas you spend a lot of time having people really understanding where people are coming from, you know, why they might disagree. You try to not only to have folks feel respected and understood, you try to, like, incorporate different kind of points of view and ultimate kind of decision making. That, in one sense, is a lot less efficient. It takes longer. If your definition of efficiency is just doing things as fast as you can to kind of keep the assembly line moving, but if you care about having a society, or you care about having a family where there is a minimum of resentment, which is what I care a lot about, which a lot of indigenous cultures cared about, that was their primary thing they cared about. How we can create human relationships in a society where people aren't filled with rage, filled with resentment to the point where they feel like taking a weapon to a school and start shooting people. I mean, that for me should be the primary goal of a family and society. How do we have folks feeling cared about, respected, and mostly not walking around with a boatload of resentment?
Well, Bruce Levine, I can't imagine that anyone disagrees with that. I don't think many people are thinking about that. And those that are probably in the short run don't see that as achievable. It would take a real sea change. And it would mean it would have to do with the Bob Marley line that is the title of your book, Get Up, Stand Up. So people are listening. They're on psychotropic drugs. They have kids that are on Ritalin, and then I guess that's even old-fashioned, all these other things. They were so depressed until they started taking Paxil or something like that. And then Bruce Levine comes along and says, this is all terrible. But they couldn't function previously. So like I said, I agree with your vision 100%. But in practical terms, if you could, maybe this is too difficult to speak to an individual that's listening that is using drugs or going, pharmaceuticals to deal with emotional problems, or is seeing a therapist whose only goal is to get the person to conform so they don't keep having the problems that they're having at school or at work or in their family. I mean, how do we deal with that in the short run?
Well, let me go back a little bit, because a huge thing, for me that I want to get across to folks is I'm not anti-drug, okay? I'm anti-hypocrisy around these psychiatric drugs. And so I totally have compassion for a lot of folks out there whose their lives are such a mess, and this is especially adults. There's plenty of adults who I know well, friends that I have, that their lives are such a mess financially, relationship-wise, a whole bunch of things, is that they're so overwhelmed by the pain in their life that the only thing they could do is find some drug to take the edge off, okay? And what I'm really, it's real important for me, for not only for a lot of reasons, is let's end the hypocrisy about the difference between so-called illegal psychotropic drugs like marijuana and psychiatric drugs like Paxil, Prozac, Valium, all of these things. In many ways, these so-called, they are actually illegal drugs like marijuana are much safer for folks. They, nobody's making a suicide attempt. Almost nobody, I've never ever heard of, maybe you have, Peter.
Nope.
And you can't, literally, you can't OD, you can't overdose off of marijuana. So there's a lot of things that, for me, the concern is not, I totally understood. Heck, I've used, drugs, alcohol myself. I have to deal with health insurance companies. Nobody in their right mind who's got any kind of a soul who has to deal with health insurance companies doesn't feel like at least having a few beers when they're done with that. Alcohol is a drug. So all of us out there, a television is a kind of a plug-in drug. There's many things that no many many of us are using to take the edge off. I totally understand that. So that's one big thing. Another embarrassment of my profession is for their own financial reasons, especially psychiatry. They're trying to make this huge difference between these illegal psychotropic drugs. And by psychotropic, I should again define, that means any drug, which is marijuana, which is cocaine, which is Prozac, that affects your neurotransmitters, your serotonin, dopamine, and all of these psychiatric drugs and illegal drugs affect these same neurotransmitters. So that's a huge issue there. Let's just end the hypocrisy and have compassion for people. And then the other aspect of what you're talking about is like, well, what the heck do we do? You know, and it can become really overwhelming if you take it upon yourself to kind of stop America from being in all these senseless wars that are bankrupting us and are just killing people and injuring, ruining people's lives and really aren't getting any of us. And that could get you even more overwhelmed and more depressed. So a big reason why I wrote Get Up Stand Up is to get more practical. What is it that you can do here? You know, what is it that can actually not get you even more depressed to take on?
Well, this is so interesting to me, and I'm looking at the clock. We have about 3 minutes left with Bruce Levine. And how do your colleagues view, or how does the profession view people that, like yourself and others, because you're not a lone wolf to be sure, that see this the necessity of looking at the totality of society when we start looking at people's individual reaction to it? Is there within your profession a number of people that agree, or do they think, well, you're just straying into politics?
I think the really sad thing is that, again, if you took a look at the 1970s, it all ended, really, with Ronald Reagan in the 1980s. Not with Reagan. I mean, America just swung to a more authoritarian society. Prior to that era, what I would be saying wouldn't be that radical. For example, like I mentioned Eric Fromm before, this is a guy who was interviewed on national television by people like Mike Wallace. People can kind of take a look at this on the Internet and see that. And this is a guy who had bestsellers, New York Times bestsellers, books like The Art of Loving. So it was not a radical point of view a generation ago. Today, it sounds extremely radical for most folks. And yes, the people who talk about what I'm talking about are few and far between in the psychiatric mental health profession among psychiatrists, psychologists. And routinely, we're almost completely marginalized. So it would be almost impossible for me to get a job in a psychology department or a psychiatry department in America. Maybe I could get a job in a sociology department or a political science department, but the guys like I know, the very few folks that I know, they're getting jobs even in native studies department if they're Native American. But psychologists who are talking the way I'm talking are not getting jobs in most of the psychology departments, and that's why psychology students are no longer really being exposed to this point of view.
You know, as we finish up, I'm looking at the cover of your latest book, Get Up, Stand Up, available from Chelsea Green Publishing. And sort of the word after all of our conversation that really jumps out at me is uniting, because we are so isolated, as you indicated, people without friends, without family. And one of the things that historically we've seen in these mass movements that have swept this country and to change its basic definitions going back into the 19th century is that people came alive when they could have face-to-face communication and have a common set of values and relate to each other in a communal way, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that's most sort of scary, I mentioned, was a statistic that really kind of blew my mind was a statistic that that 25% of Americans, and this was actually a really well-done study that really probed deeply, just didn't survey people, but they found 25% of Americans do not have a single confidant in their life, somebody that they could kind of trust, talk about heavy things with. And this is up from only 10% just 25 years ago. So people are becoming more and more isolated. And I think one of the things that if anybody has ever gone like one of the things that I think that the Occupy movement was really wonderful about, if anybody just would have gone to one of them, is just feel what it would be like. I remember there was a very small one here in Cincinnati, Ohio, where I'm at, but I spent a bunch of time because I knew some folks in the Occupy DC movement, which was actually organized before the one in New York and Occupy Wall Street, but it didn't get as much publicity. And I went to theirs, and I remember entering where they were situated.
Bruce, let me interrupt you. We're just going to run out in about 30 seconds, so I need.
But it was just this wonderful feeling. I mean, you just feel all of a sudden like this wave of energy that people would experience, even if they don't care so much about the politics,
and that,
they would be amazed to be revitalized.
And that sums up what is in Bruce E. Levine's latest book, Get Up, Stand Up, Uniting Populace, Energizing the Defeated, and Battling the Corporate Elite. You can go to brucelevine.net. My website will have a link as well, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. Bruce Levine, thanks for being on the broadcast.
Great to be with you, Peter.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
This is 101 WRIF. Thanks for rocking with us online at WRIF.com.
How would you like to see customers through your door today and the next day and the day after that? I have the answer you're looking for. RiffDeals.com. Hey, you're online now. Just click on the banner in the player window to find out more. Remember, there's no upfront cost to you. It's a partnership, but your success is the goal. WRAF's marketing pros work with you to develop the perfect deal. Then RiffDeals.com uses the power of on-air, online, and social media marketing to help you reach new customers. Oh, did I mention that you get a check within 10 days of your successful deal running? That's cash in your pocket and customers in the door.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werbe.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werbe here with you. Well, you know the old saying, everybody talks about the weather, but nobody does anything about it. And pretty much it's considered to be something that beyond human, not comprehension, because now we can kind of comprehend what's happening, but it's nothing we can do about it. It just happens. Well, we have just come through this catastrophic event on the east coast of the United States, and the weather seems to be getting stranger and stranger. I hope all of this has put to rest these climate change deniers, because what we are beginning to see in the most dramatic manner possible is weather that's going to affect us in a dramatic and, in some cases like this one, in a horrendous way. Joining me is Daniel J. Kessler, and Daniel Kessler is a media organizer for the group 350.org. And remember I said about everybody talks about the weather, nobody does anything about it? 350.org is building a global grassroots movement to solve the climate crisis. I want to hear about this. We need to know about it. We're reaching Daniel Kessler in the 350.org office in Oakland, California. Daniel, welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, thanks a lot for having us on.
Well, what kind of broad perspective would you bring about the events of Hurricane Sandy? Does that say, I told you so? Is that what you're thinking?
Well, that's nothing that I would ever say, but I think there's probably a lot of scientists around the country and the world who would say, I told you so. When you look at their scientific modeling that they've been doing over the years, and they predicted essentially what we're seeing now, what we're going to see in the future, about a generation ago. And a lot of climate deniers have kind of poo-pooed their climate modeling, but as we've seen, actually what they came up with was quite conservative compared to what we're now experiencing. And as you said in the introduction, this is kind of a preview of what's to come if we don't get serious about solving the climate crisis.
Yeah, is it worth spending any time on climate deniers? I mean, it occurs to me, if it wasn't for the funding for foundations and so-called scientific work that the money coming from these big energy companies or broadcast on right-wing outlets, this wouldn't even be an issue, because the vast majority of climatologists and scientists involved in this stuff say it's happening. So is it worth spending time telling the climate deniers they're wrong?
Well, I guess there's a couple different ways to look at it. I mean, the size of the problem is so massive that if we're going to solve it, we really need all hands on deck. And so there is an incentive to get people on the other side to come on over. But we also don't want to spend a lot of time convincing people who can't be convinced. So there's a bit of a tension there. But my organization is really dedicated to building a grassroots movement that's strong enough to solve this problem. And anyone who wants to join up is more than welcome to come with us, whether or not they're coming at it because they deny climate change, or they believe in climate change, or they just want to get off of fossil fuels because of the control that the fossil fuel companies exert over our government. We'll really take anybody as long as they're, ready for action.
Yeah, and the group is 350.org. It's also the website, and if that's an easy one to remember. Even still, there'll be a link on my website 2350.org. Daniel Kessler, media campaigner for the organization, is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. And I guess we should dismiss these evangelicals who say this is God's punishment for the United States, and these Muslim clerics that say this is Allah's punishment for the, you know, the U.S. Carrying out crimes against the Muslim world. Let's get grounded in reality. You know, when you talk about how horrible the problem is and how large it is, it's frightening. I mean, yet you're talking about 350.org building a global grassroots movement to solve the climate crisis. This almost, I hope I'm emphasizing the correct word, almost seems beyond human control. Huh?
Well, I don't think it's beyond human control, but we're certainly spinning out of control. We have a small window right now to take action, and if we don't take advantage of it, then it is going to spin out of control. When you look at the science, it basically, the number that the scientists always come back to is this 2 degrees Celsius temperature rise number. They consider that to be sort of the red line, the point of no return. And we've already raised global temperatures about 0.8 degrees Celsius over the last, say, 100 years. So we're almost halfway there. And if we don't stop burning fossil fuels, we're gonna get past that 2 degree mark sooner than I think a lot of people think, maybe within a generation. And then we're gonna be dealing with some very, very, very scary stuff. So there is a window to take action, but you know, what we lack right now is the political will, and there's a lot of reasons for that. The fossil fuel industry has pumped, for instance, $150 million into this election cycle. And I think you can make a safe argument that they've bought climate science silence from our leaders. We had 4 presidential debates, 3 with the presidential candidates, 1 with the vice presidents, and neither the candidates nor the moderators ever deemed to bring up climate change and global warming. And that's at a time when we had record temperatures this summer. You know, we actually shattered over 17,000 temperature records this past year, and at a time when we had half the country in drought. And you know, the fossil fuel companies are getting what they want with this massive amount of money they're pumping into our system. We are never going to be able to match them when it comes to spending money.
Sure.
But we will be able to match them when it comes to building a force of people strong enough to stand up to them.
Well, I wonder, when we have catastrophes like occurred with Hurricane Sandy, and as we record this on Friday before the Sunday that this is being played, how much of a wake-up call this is. I mean, there was certainly, this admiration for President Obama and the way he handled it and the response of the Federal Emergency Management Agency and all that. But we don't want this to keep happening, right? We don't want to say, oh, how presidential the who happens to be the president at the time was for the next catastrophe. So I wonder whether people have learned anything.
Well, you know, sometimes it takes a big shock to get people to change their perspective. And I think Hurricane Sandy certainly serves as a big shock. And we're starting to see a lot of changes in public opinion. And we're starting to see some of our leaders, policymakers, come on out and talk about the connection between climate change and extreme weather and the idea that we need to take action. And that there's a big, that we have the choice right now to engage on this fight and fight it in a serious way, in a way that's proportional to the problem. You know, what you'll hear a lot of people say is that we don't have the technology to deal with this problem, that we're addicted to fossil fuels and that's just the way it is. And that's not true. You look at a state like Iowa, pretty close to Michigan, Iowa gets 20% of their energy right now from wind power.
Really?
And you look over at Germany, not a country you really think of when it comes to being very sunny, but last year they had a day where they generated over 50% of their energy from solar. So we have the technology now. We can do it. Other places are doing it much faster than us. And we know that the American people are, you know, a creative people, an independent people, that we have the technology and the know-how to do this. We just need to get serious. And getting serious means getting the fossil fuel companies out of the way.
Well, 100 years ago, and you may know this, Thomas Edison was advocating a windmill at every single person's house that would generate electricity for domestic use and also power battery-driven cars. Of course, we went the other way with internal combustion. But I don't know if I'd like to live in a neighborhood where there was, you know, hundreds of windmills, but certainly, you know, wind fields and what's available from low cost, at least, you know, low cost energy at the beginning point, sun and wind, It seems to be an improvement of having to fight wars and the pollution. And I mean, when you say this to people, I mean, everybody agrees. You say oil is deadly at every point, from the wellhead to the wars we have to fight to secure the wellheads. It's shipping, it's refining, it's burning, it's disposal. And most people go, yeah, right. And then, you know, me and everybody else, we hop in our cars. Is there individual solutions? Does your organization, 350.org, would we do well to, be individual conservationists, or is it more necessary for a large societal solution, or both?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Can you repeat that? Apologies.
No. It's too long a question. What about, we'll leave it, the answer is obvious, it's both, about individual conservation habits as compared to society-wide solutions, yeah, or both.
Yeah, I mean, the choices that individuals make are extremely important. Limiting the amount of energy we use, jumping on a bicycle, buying locally produced food, that stuff's really important. But on a macro scale, we're talking about the upstream energy of where we get our electricity from. And, you know, it's really only the utilities and the fossil fuel companies that can change this stuff at a massive scale. And so, yes, the decisions we make at home are extremely important, but so is the political engagement to get these huge conglomerations, huge corporations to make serious choices about investing in renewable energy instead of business as usual with fossil fuels.
Well, I know we're now living, I just picked up this phrase, for a dollarocracy rather than a democracy. We're living in a dollarocracy where money rules. I mean, I suppose this is nothing new either, but the people that can make these decisions that you're talking about, the fossil fuel companies, they don't seem to be willing to move one iota. In fact, they want to go in the opposite direction and take a lot of environmental regulations off their facilities, which would mean more profits for them. But tell us some about your organization, 350.org, and the work that it's done in terms of large public displays of essentially challenge to fossil fuel. I mean, particularly there was this huge outpouring in October of 2009 that I remember. Tell us about that. Give us an idea of what people can actually do.
Well, yeah. I mean, as you mentioned, 350 has been kind of famous for pulling together these big global days of action. We'll have thousands of events in really hundreds of countries. This event that you mentioned had actions in 195 countries. And the idea is to get people together to creatively show their leaders that they're serious about taking on the climate challenge, that we're building this global movement that's big enough to solve the problem. And, now we're sort of shifting our efforts, or at least our concentration, on the directly taking the fossil fuel industry. And actually, we're just getting ready to launch a new campaign on campuses to ask campus or university endowments to take their money out of fossil fuel companies. Endowments have about $400 billion wrapped up in the stock market. And the idea that they would be investing in fossil fuel companies that are wrecking the planet that their students are going to inherit is, it's counterintuitive and morally wrong. So we're modeling our campaign based on the anti-apartheid movement of the 80s, where universities came together and pulled their money out of companies that were doing business with South Africa. And we're hoping we can spark a similar conversation and have similar effect with this campaign.
This is usually a question one asks at the end about whether or not you're hopeful. And when there was the introduction of new technology that replaced older forms, say 100 years ago with the automobile replacing horses and all that, it was technology replacing non-technological devices. But here, I mean, the infrastructure, the profits, the whole apparatus of fossil fuels just seems like an edifice that's, I mean, I hate to say it because I agree with you guys 100%. It almost seems unassailable. But, I mean, I guess with that attitude, one would ensure nothing changes. But, and I suppose you can't say, no, I don't have much hope, but I'm doing it anyway. how can we confront this megalith of wealth and pollution?
Well, I'd be lying to you if I said it was going to be easy. Certainly a lot of the tactics that we've tried over the last few years aren't working. We're losing. You can see with Hurricane Sandy, the climate is getting worse, and it's going to continue to get worse unless we do something about it. So we're doing everything that we can. A lot of people are doing everything they can, but you know, the way we see it is that our currency has to be people, and people coming together and changing our political system and really holding the fossil fuel companies to account. They've become sort of a rogue industry. And when you and I first started talking, you were mentioning the political divide on this issue, and we really look at us as being the conservatives. You know, we want to conserve the planet that we grew up on, and we want to be able to give this to future generations so they can experience the same planet that we lived on. The fossil fuel companies are the extremists. They're actually changing the chemistry of our planet, and we're seeing the effects of it. I would call that pretty radical, and I think most people would agree with that. So, you know, there's a consensus that's coming around, coming together around this issue, and we still have a chance to win, but we better get serious, and we better do it soon.
My guest is Daniel Kessler. He's a media campaigner for 350.org. We're reaching him at their headquarters in Oakland, California. And probably the most prominent spokesman of 350.org is Bill McKibben, an incredible environmentalist and a great spokesperson for the movement. There'll be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com, as well, in case you're missing this. You're driving, you know, keep driving. You can always go to my website or to 350. .org. It's easy, it's particularly easy for me to identify the Koch brothers and their energy companies as really being the bad guy, and that they want to, you know, roll back regulations on fossil fuel consumption and what have you. And yet, are there any forward thinking either, total energy companies that are forward thinking, or does anybody have a mixed bag among the biggies that would be saying, hey, look at, you know, we got to move away from this and eventually, change the way our portfolio is constructed?
Yeah, I wish I could answer yes to that.
Huh.
I mean, there's some,
disappointed,
some utilities who are looking a little more progressively, but they're being forced to by government policy. I mean, the example that I think of most readily is British Petroleum, BP, now called Beyond Petroleum. People probably remember them from their extravaganza last year in the Gulf Coast.
Wait a minute, what are
Water
they?
Horizon.
What are they calling themselves now?
Well, they changed their name a few years ago from British Petroleum to Beyond Petroleum, and they changed their logo to be green and have solar in it, and they gave a big press conference saying that they were going to get serious about renewable energy. And they really didn't change things very much. And then actually last year they sold off the part of their company that deals with renewable clean energy. So, you know, they're kind of a classic example. They want to get the headlines and show that they're green, but in fact, what they're really doing is double downing on the business model that's gotten us into this trouble. You look at a company like ExxonMobil, you know, Exxon's the richest company essentially in the history of money. They made $45 billion in one quarter last year.
Yeah.
That is astronomical. And they're investing $100 million a day in places like the Arctic and the Gulf Coast looking for more oil. They want to continue to fill their reserves and keep their stock price going. The problem is that the reserves that they're getting and the product that they're pushing out is wrecking the planet, and we have to stop them.
But well, there's some, if you will, amidst a bad situation, some oil that's worse than others. That's one thing when it gets kind of tapped right out of the ground in Texas or Saudi Arabia or Venezuela, and then you have like this tar sands oil. Tell us a little about that and that big pipeline and how that what issue that involves.
Sure, I think you're referring to the Keystone XL pipeline.
Right.
And what that pipeline would do is connect the oil fields in Canada down to the Gulf Coast so that this company, TransCanada, could actually export the oil that they're getting from Canada. So it goes through the United States. We'd have to deal with the potential for an oil spill, but we wouldn't get the oil. And for people who aren't familiar
with the what do you mean we wouldn't get the oil? Aren't they sending it right out to the good old U.S. of A., North America? Doesn't that make us oil?
No, they're actually building the pipeline down to the Gulf Coast where there's a lot of refineries and where, of course, there's ready access to the Gulf shipping.
Yeah.
So the idea is that they would pump it through the United States and then export it to other countries. So that, you know, if you hear politicians saying that this is going to make us energy independent, that's a load of bunk.
Mm-hmm.
For people who aren't familiar with the oil fields up in Canada, they actually have more carbon there, more oil than Saudi Arabia. And if we tap into that in a very serious way, climate scientists tell us it's going to be, quote, game over for the climate, that it's just too much carbon up there for us to deal with. So the environmental community and a lot of farmers and ranchers and people from all walks of life have come together to oppose this pipeline. And last year we actually got 1,200 people arrested in front of the White House over 2 weeks to oppose this pipeline. And a few months later, we came back and surrounded the White House with 15,000 people. So there's a huge movement against this. And no matter who's elected, you can anticipate that this pipeline is going to be a serious issue in the coming year.
Why wouldn't one would think the Democrats are these wonderful environmentalists led by President Obama and these awful the people that wanted to spoil the planet led by the Koch brothers and their nominee? How are the Democrats doing? Is that a caricature?
Well, I mean, there's certainly a difference between the parties. You look at President Obama, for instance, and up in Michigan, you guys will know that he's raised fuel economy standards for cars and trucks to 54.5 miles per gallon. That's going to save billions of barrels of oil. And he's protecting the EPA from really craven attacks from the Republicans. So he's done a lot of good on the environment. He has not done enough. He's not done stuff that's proportional to the problem of climate change. Mitt Romney, he released a 21-page energy plan this summer. It never mentions climate change. It never mentions global warming. It gives kind of a passing nod to clean energy, but it's mostly saying we want to drill more. We want to frack more for natural gas. We want to burn more coal. We want to double down on the practices that got us into this problem. And to me, that's pretty scary. Mm-hmm. We don't know what he would do if he was elected.
President Obama spoke about clean coal as well, which most people say is sort of a misnomer. Yeah. Okay.
There's actually no such thing as clean coal. I wish that phrase kind of disappeared from our lexicon. But, the age of coal is dead. It's a 19th century technology, and it's not going to come back. And we don't need it to because we have wind and solar and hydro and other technologies that can take its place.
Well, there's also there's some critics say that there is just that you can't get enough energy out of wind and solar to power the entire modern economy of the world now. I'll leave that question to that. You've probably heard that. Is it possible to do so?
It's pretty complicated, but yes, it's possible. If you look at some of the new renewable energy installations that are going up around the country, it's pretty amazing. In Wyoming, they're just signing off on a wind farm that's going to power 1 million homes in the Rocky Mountains. And there's the Energy Secretary Salazar is greenlighting a program off the Atlantic seaboard that would power 1.5 million homes. This is just with wind. And a study came out 2 months ago from Stanford that showed that if we use 0.06% of the Earth's global landmass, we could power the whole world. That's with wind. So it can be done. It's going to be difficult. The fossil fuel companies are going to stand in our way. They're going to tell you that it can't be done. They're going to tell you that we have to stay addicted to fossil fuels. And the politicians that want to protect them are going to say the same thing. But that's not reality. And, if we don't really have a choice. We just saw it with Hurricane Sandy. No one wants to give the next generation a planet that's absolutely wrecked. And fossil fuels are wrecking the planet. So we need to get off them as soon as we possibly can.
Well, Daniel Kessler, go ahead and finish.
Oh, I was just going to say, I have to apologize, but I need to run.
okay.
I'm dealing with sort of an emergency here.
All right. Thank you very much. You have a great day. Bye now.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIM. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Rip Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit. Rockin' Detroit at 101.1 FM and the rest of the planet online at WRIF.com.
No matter how much our kids amaze us, they can't run for Michigan Supreme Court this year. That's why they need judges who stand up for them.
Michigan Supreme Court candidates Judge Connie Kelly, Judge Sheila Johnson, and family advocate Bridget McCormick have spent their careers protecting families and victims of crime.
From getting criminals off our streets to keeping kids out of gangs, Kelly, Johnson, and McCormick are keeping families safer.
As mothers and advocates for children, Connie Kelly, Sheila Johnson, and Bridget McCormick have zero tolerance for violence.
violence against women and kids.
Unlike current Michigan Supreme Court justices who suggest sexual harassment is protected as free speech and ruled corporations have no responsibility to prevent workplace assault or even rape, Kelly, Johnson, and McCormick take violence against women seriously.
Supreme Court candidates Judge Connie Kelly, Judge Sheila Johnson, and family advocate Bridget McCormick.
These three protect families.
Paid for by the Michigan Democratic State Central Committee, not authorized by any candidate committee.
Detroit's rock station rocks worldwide. You're listening to WRIF.com.
That rocks.